All right, everybody. It is 1:05 on February the 1st, 2025. I am David Knight, your host with Prodigy of KCSI Dallas Presents The Journey, our monthly meeting slash show where we bring researchers and special people involved over the years that are first, second, third, and so on generations, trying to get the information out there about the JFK assassination. Sometimes we go a little off topic on other things, but hey, we're glad you're with us. It's a balmy 41 degrees in Kansas here in the Midwest, so I'm hoping everybody's doing well. Welcome back after the new year. Hey, we've got a new year to kick off. We've got some new information, and we've got a new administration in the White House. Love him or hate him, it's Donald Trump as our president again. So I want to kick off here first and foremost with doing a quick screen share. For those of you that would like to find out more information about us, you can go to our Project JFK website at projectjfk.com. There is a plethora of information. You can go here and click on the certain tabs at the top, and you can find out one thing in particular, our events tab, that gives you information on upcoming events that we're doing, whether it's our monthly meeting on Zoom or whether it is our conferences. And you can always click on the Eventbrite ticket for more information with either our free events here or when we're doing our conferences. And you can also find our replays here on this page for our journey meetings. You can find the audio only, so if you want to take us with you in the vehicle. You can also find transcripts of the chat logs, and I encourage people to go and look at those because there's a lot of information that we talk about in the meeting, especially when we're doing call to actions with Larry Snaff. So if you need to find the information, you can find it there. For our people that are viewing this on YouTube on the next day replay, you can see what you missed out since you didn't see the chat log live. You can go back and look and see what we talked about. Of course, person-to-person information shared back and forth is private. Only what is shared with the group is available. You can also click on our J. Gary Shaw Legacy tab number 1 and number 2. You are going to find a nice written bio about Gary, but also you're going to see slides, photographs that you are not going to see in this quality anywhere else on the internet. So please go through there and check those out. And also, if you're looking for something that maybe you also, Larry Rivera Legacy tab is on here as well, but the affiliated website page is the yellow pages of the JFK assassination research community. You can click on any of the photographs or the titles, and you can go right to their website. If there are any broken links, I try to update those as quick as possible, so that way, you know, it's the information that you're looking for. And finally, if you like what we're doing here at Project JFK CSI Dallas, whether it is our conferences, our shows, what the website is doing, you can always click on the Donate Now button, and you can donate securely through our website and through PayPal and get your name put up on the wall as one of our supporters. So, you know, donate a little, donate a lot. It's up to you, but every little bit helps to keep us going the way that we're going. And if you have ideas that you'd like to see, especially on the show, or maybe a special guest that you would like to have us have on in a spotlight, then please reach out at projectjfk@yahoo.com, or you can also reach us through the About Us tab on the website in order to maybe have your viewpoint come across. And if I can make it happen, I will make it happen, getting people on that you would like to hear from. Let's see. First and foremost, let's see. Let's change gears. I know that a lot has happened recently in the news. I'm going to call on Larry Snaff here. But first and foremost, let me go in here on the share screen tab. You guys can find this information at the whitehouse.gov website. Let me quickly bring this up here. For those of you that would like to know exactly what was in the presidential action of the of the executive order that was signed. You can read it in its entirety. As soon as I can get my screen here to work. Here we go. This is what Trump had signed in order to get the records released, not only for JFK, but RFK and MLK. There's a page that gives you the entire order in its entirety, and then also there is also another screen here I want to show, and this is the fact sheet. So if you want the skinny, so to speak, on what is in here, or if you have questions about that, you can also check out the fact sheet on the declassification, and on here it this is what I want to talk to Larry about, but this is basically the outline. This is a memo that was sent out to the press to answer questions for their publications, and then for also the public to know what's actually in there and what the timeline is. It's a little vague to me, but in particular it says the order directs the Director of National Intelligence and other appropriate officials to present a plan within 15 days for the full and complete release of all of the JFK assassination records and immediately review the records relating to RFK, MLK, and present their full plan in a complete release within 45 days. Let's see if we can definitely hold them to this and if they're going to finally give us what the hell we've been asking for all these years. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Larry Snapp. I want him to, he's got a call for action for all of us to listen to. So, Larry, go ahead and take it away, sir.
Okay. Thank you, David. By the way, the order was published in the Federal Register yesterday. It now has an executive order number. If you have access to the Federal Register, you go to the first page and then you scroll down to presidential documents. And so that is the official published version of the order. What David shared is the one that's on the website on the White House. Either way, you need access to it. So I would characterize this order as a good first step. Unlike what the headlines are, this order does not declassify the records. The president could have easily written, "I hereby instruct the National Archives to release all of the rest of the JFK records." He didn't do that. He said that he was asking the Director of National Intelligence, who right now is not been confirmed, the Director of the CIA, the National Security Advisor, the Attorney General, who has not yet been confirmed, to come up with a plan to release the records, and that plan is to be submitted within 15 days. So there's a lots of, so with respect to JFK records, there's some questions that are unclear. First of all, it looks like the assumption is that the JFK collection is the universe of records, which we know is not. There are records that are not in the JFK collection. Number one. Number two, what is this plan going to look like? Because just 2 years ago, the same parties that President Trump now is asked to prepare a plan, prepare transparency plans for President Biden. And in their transparency plans, they call for release of records or review of records for release in the 2040s. Now, presumably, the people now populating, and let me take a step back. We know from my lawsuit against the National Archives, my personal lawsuit, that the National Security Council basically hijacked the process and was tasked with orchestrating the reviews in 2017 and 2018 for the Trump administration. Presumably the same thing was done with the Biden administration. Now, President Trump did fire 150 people from the NSC last week, and one would think that the acting, at least the people he's appointing, are going to carry out his wishes. But we know how the alphabet agencies are reluctant to release any information. So, while this was released, this order, Jeff Morley and JFK Facts, by the way, I published an article on the JFK Facts Substack on the issues with the order. in the meantime, Senator David Schweikert, who is the congressman from Arizona who last year introduced the Justice for JFK Act, he has, believe it or not, cooperated with Democratic Steve Cohen from Memphis, and Steve Cohen has been probably the leading Democratic congressman who continually wrote letters to President Biden asking him to release the records. The two of them sent the letter to the White House, and what it did was they were coordinating with JFK Facts to come up with the contents or the elements of what this plan should look like. Basically trying to put meat on the bones, trying to preempt whatever the agencies might put together. Basically telling the president, here is what the plan should provide for. Now, David, I sent you a copy of the letter, so you could put it on your website. Now, more importantly, here's the call to action. Representative Schweikert and Cohen have sent what we call a Dear Colleague letter to every person in the House of Representatives, asking them to sign on to this letter. And this letter would then be sent again to the president. And what you can do, every one of you, should call your representative in the House of Representatives on Monday or Tuesday. So this is time of the essence. If the agencies comply with the deadline in the executive order, and I don't know if they're going to because obviously the officials have not been appointed yet, but if they do, this plan is due by Friday, this coming Friday, the 7th. So what we're asking everybody to do is to call up your congressional representative, not just senator, your House of Representatives. You can call them in D.C. or you can call the district office in your state and ask them to sign the Dear Colleague letter sent to them by Representative Cohen and Schweikert about the MLK, JFK, and RFK records. That's all you have to ask them. You want them to sign the Dear Colleague letter that was sent to them by Representative Schweikert and Cohen about the JFK, RFK, and MLK records. Call them up, leave that message, and you can leave your phone number, ask them if they want to call you back. We want to get as many people as possible to sign this letter because this letter basically, we're trying to preempt what the alphabet agencies are going to come up with. We're basically telling the president, this is what the plan should call for. And it's basically one of the things we're asking for is to have some informal, some team to review the records, not just have the NSC review it. What are you sharing, David? The letter? Yeah. So this is the letter that was sent by the two by Cohen and Schweikert, the third representative, who's also a Republican. But what they sent to their colleagues was a Dear Colleague letter saying, please sign this letter. David, can you scroll down? So here's you'll see there's a certain elements here. This is what we're asking the plan to call for. So as you see, number four, the transparency plans weren't rescinded. And we're basically asking for the records to be digitized and assign a senior White House staff member to monitor the process and create an independent oversight board to ensure agency compliance. So these are the kind of – and then we're also asking the Schweikert bill is the second step. We're going to try to get that – some action on it because that would actually overrule the deed of gift limitations on them. But the president doesn't have the authority to do that. But anyway, so these are the three people that signed it. So they sent a Dear Colleague letter. So you're not asking, you're simply going to ask your representative to please sign the Dear Colleague letter that they received from Steve Cohen and David Schweikert about the MLK, JFK, and RFK records. Now, for those of you interested in the MLK and RFK issue, it's a little interesting jurisdictional question. Because the president can only order the declassification of executive records. So to the extent there are records that, say, from the Church Committee or from the HSCA that deal with MLK, the president has no authority of those records. In addition, the In addition, there are records probably, for example, for MLK with Memphis. The president would have no jurisdiction over that either. It's even worse with RFK, because most of the RFK records are going to be either LAPD or the district attorney's office. So it's unclear how the president can require the release of those records that are not within the possession of the federal government. So there are some details. Now, the JFK Act does not give the president the authority to require or direct state or local governments to forward records to them. The JFK Act did for JFK records. So I don't know if we're going to need another statute, amendment to the statute. But right now, all what you can do to make sure that this plan is as robust as possible is to call your congressperson on Monday. And again, it's critical you call them on Monday, because Friday is when the plan is due. And ask them to sign this Dear Colleague letter from Representative Cohen and Schweikert about the MLK, RFK, and JFK records. The 45 days is for the MLK and JFK, RFK records. So the first deadline is the JFK collection records. And again, it's unclear to me. In fact, I would suspect that they think they're only going to be looking at the records in the collection, and there's a whole bunch of categories of records that we want to be put into the collection that have never been put in the collection. The Joannides records, for example. The Carlos Marcello alleged confession tape. the Darnell film. You know, there's stuff that is not in the collection. There's also the RFK records that he took from the White House an hour after the assassination. They're not in the collection. So simply releasing everything in the collection is not going to really solve what we want to be done. But for right now, on Monday morning, call up your representative. Either you can call up in Washington or call to the local office, the district office, and ask them to sign on to the Dear Colleague letter.
Hey, Larry, I'm going to take a quick pause here. We're going to come back to you in just a minute. Real fast, because of time constraints, I want to introduce somebody that has not been on our meetings before, special guest for us. I'm going to have Tyler Nixon introduce him. And ladies and gentlemen, this is Roger Stone. And Tyler Nixon, go ahead and take it away.
Sure. Well, I don't think Roger needs much introduction. I mean, he's been involved in the community and wrote the definitive, well, along with Phil Nelson, the LBJ book on the assassination, and he's here to just share some comments and join the group for a bit. He was probably the critical person, the single most critical person in getting President Trump to make this move with the declassification. So, Roger, welcome.
I'm delighted to be with you all. First of all, my hat's off to everybody on this call, because you've done all of the underlying work necessary. And I pay huge tribute to all those JFK researchers who went before us. I was able to rely on their work with attribution in my book. James Teig gave me a personal interview just before he died, actually, so I was very, very, very grateful for. But we stand on the shoulders of those who went before us, those who, you know, the media tried to crush when they suggested that maybe the Warren Commission got it wrong. I've been taunting Gerald Posner by text almost hourly. I think he may be suicidal at this point. As I said on X this morning, he is conceivably the last person on the planet who believes the conclusions of the Warren Commission or that Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK and he acted alone. And he's actually, in a weird way, he's a friend of mine, meaning we have a dialogue. He's written a couple good books, but Case Closed is not one of them. I began talking to the president about this when I realized that the act of Congress that mandated the release of these records that was passed in the 90s fell in 2017. It was interesting to me when I first brought it up with him in a phone call that he was completely unaware that this deadline was coming. And he said, why don't I know this? And I said, well, that's not a question for me. That's a question for your staff and the people who work for you. He said, are you certain about this? And I said, I'm absolutely certain, sir. And he said, well, what do you think I ought to do? And I said, you ought to release it all. You ought to release everything you have. It's been more than 50 years. It's time for the American people to know the truth. I also pointed out to him, as Larry just said, I said, you actually don't have control of everything, but you should release everything you do have control of, and then you should work towards getting the rest of it released. I really believe that he was prepared to do that. We had a subsequent conversation, which I gave him another push. And then, as you know, he did release a lot of material and a lot of interesting material. But as he told me at the time, and he told Judge Andrew Napolitano, and as he told Sean Hannity the other night on Fox, Mike Pompeo, the CIA director, convinced him at the very end to hold back what Trump said was about 20% of the material. That I think speaks volumes in itself, that it was the CIA director who doesn't want this out. It's also interesting that at the time he told me that the ambassador from Israel argued strongly against release, which is also interesting. Then when it became apparent to me during this most recent campaign that he was likely to win, which perhaps not everybody saw, but I was in a position to look at daily polling in the swing states and compare them with the public polls. And the survey researcher that the president used, Tony Fabrizio, I think is the best in the country, actually lives about three blocks from here. We did our first campaign together when he was 18 and I was 24, race for Congress on Long Island. He's a brilliant guy, and he's a great researcher. He's also incredibly blunt. So during the campaign, I suggested that the president, particularly as his relationship with Robert Kennedy bloomed, and that, candidly, that alliance didn't come together easily. There was a lot of backstage negotiation. Tucker Carlson was instrumental in that, others. But I think it's built an important relationship. Relationships can be very good for the country in the long term. But as his affection and respect for RFK grew, and as I got him, as I got the president to watch some of RFK's interviews, particularly the interview with Mike Tyson, which YouTube immediately, took down, he pledged that this time, he said that he'd made a mistake by not releasing everything, which I can't even begin to tell you how monumental that is, because Donald Trump never admits mistakes. It's not in his makeup. And he pledged that he would do this. I didn't have to remind him. He moved on it almost immediately. One of the delays in this coming up with the plan, he told me, is it's not a great bulk of JFK material, but he says when you take the JFK, RFK, and MLK material, it's over 5 million pages. So his directive has been that this needs to be organized in a way that is fully searchable and organized in some fashion in which they're just not throwing stuff out that is hard to parse. I have no doubt that he will not brook any pushback from this. I've talked to him specifically about no redactions, nothing can be held back, in those instances where you have we have an acting attorney general right now who's a bureaucrat. We do have the national security advisor. I've talked to Mike Waltz about this. He's for full disclosure. I think we're going to see as much as they have. I mean, Larry's right. They don't have everything, but what they do have is going to be very valuable. Once again, he tells me that he's gotten objections from the ambassador from Israel, which I find interesting. I don't know what that means. Maybe we'll find out in the disclosures what it means. I think this is an important step. Now, the only disappointment I have is I also want him to release all of the documents pertaining to the attempted assassination on Ronald Reagan. Because, as you know, the government has never released a final investigative report. We have a brief statement from Vice President George Bush assuring us that they found no evidence of a conspiracy. And sure, we'd believe that. Why wouldn't we believe that? So I think he's considering that now. In fact, I said, look, all of these assassination records, whether it's the attempted assassination of Richard Nixon in Miami, which very few people know about, or the attempted assassination on Carter by Puerto Rican nationalists, or whether it is the attempted assassination of Ford by a follower of Charles Manson, or it is the classified documents regarding Butler, Pennsylvania, and West Palm Beach. All of this material should ultimately be declassified and released to the public. I know that he is thinking about my request about Reagan. I hope that he will follow through on that. So I think you're right. It's a good first step. I do think we have to we are going to have to fight to get the material regarding the RFK assassination out of the LAPD. We're going to have to fight to get the Memphis police, who, as you know, were successfully sued in a civil suit by the King family to release what they have. The fight is far from over, but I think we're making very, very important strides. I'm going to see the president tonight at dinner, and I'm going to just remind him that he cannot let the bureaucrats get in the way of full disclosure. You can see that he has a lot on his plate. You can see he's moving very aggressively in a number of areas. Energy-wise, I don't know how he does it. I really don't. I mean, he was in three states on last Friday. I think he finally got out for a game of golf today. But his energy level is extraordinary, and he's deeply committed on this. And frankly, RFK Jr. has played who I'm also friendly with and who I have coordinated with on this effort. Been very, very helpful. We may yet see a commission, which RFK would be the chair of, to review all this material. I see that happening at the juncture that he decides to release all presidential assassination material beginning in 1963 and to the current day, which I think is very much on the table. RFK would be the ideal person to head such a commission. Some of the people who work for him may not be the ideal people to work on that commission, but he would be ideal. And the president likes that idea, I can tell you that. I am growingly confident about RFK's confirmation. I am on the vote count team. Also, the letter that Larry put up, I've been working very closely with Tim Burchett.
Oh, good.
Who was on my 77 WABC radio show last Sunday, but I've been working very closely with him to make sure that once again the bureaucrats in the three-letter agencies don't hold everything back or hide anything. So it's going to be a very exciting week. I also think you have to I have to comment on the audio tape that Alex Jones obtained. What's interesting is that the gentleman, who I guess is Billy Salas' great-grandson, contacted me almost 2 years ago with this audio, and somebody who worked for me, who no longer works for me, told him that I was not interested. And, of course, since it proves yet again the central thesis of my book and the involvement of Malcolm McWallace, of course I would have been extremely interested. But Doug Caddy, who represented Billy Saul, has done a number of interviews, written quite a bit about this as well. So to me, and I think everybody agreed, this is a puzzle. It's a puzzle that has different parts. One of the problems in our community has been that people who want to know more about this have approached it based on their area of expertise. So the House Select Committee on Assassinations was staffed by people whose expertise was in organized crime. So they had a preconceived idea that only our organized crime was responsible. Others who have specialized at looking at the CIA, Jim Douglas's excellent book. But he focuses almost solely on the CIA. After I wrote my book, I got a nice note from Oliver Stone, who said he wished he had read my book before he made his movie and not after, because he didn't realize that LBJ has such a prominent role in this course of events. So there are more pieces to this puzzle that we still don't have. But again, my hat's off to everybody on this call and to the many who've gone before us who are no longer with us. Until we get everything, obviously none of us can rest. But I will be staying on the president just to make sure that in the hurly-burly of what he has to do on the average day and all the other massive responsibilities that he has, that we don't have what happened last time. I do have to point out that Joe Biden, his successor, released nothing, which was disappointing. I guess lastly, I should say that I have a two-hour special on 77 WABC Radio in New York, which is the most powerful AM radio station in the country. It's also syndicated in 13 markets. Tyler is joining me, Gary Shaw is joining me, Douglas Horn is joining me, and Brian Edwards, I believe, is joining us. So we'll actually probably end up being about 2.5 hours straight. I'm going to sit back and let them do most of the talking. People know what I think. LBJ might take a couple hits. It's possible. You can hear that wherever you are by going to WABCRadio.com. WABCRadio.com starts at 3 p.m. Eastern this tomorrow, Sunday. Tune in for that, and I think it's going to be a blockbuster. We're going to get into the whole Roscoe White issue, which many people don't know about. I find that material fascinating and compelling. And then we probably will take call-ins for those. I'm trying to arrange to take call-ins for those who want to ask questions. With that, I'm going to go eat some lunch, but I appreciate being invited today. And again, a great tribute to everybody on the call here and all the incredible work that you have already done to get to the truth.
Roger, I want to say on behalf of Project JFK CSI Dallas, we appreciate you coming on and sharing some insight. It was enlightful, and hey, we've got to keep up the fight, and you've been in it for quite some time, so I want to say on behalf of myself, Brian, and Casey, we are very happy that you stopped by to speak with us.
Great honor for me to be here. And remember, tomorrow, 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern, WABCRadio.com. I think it's going to be a great show. My thanks to my longtime personal attorney, Tyler Nixon, for helping put this together. He's going to be essentially co-hosting with me, and he's going to help me play traffic cop. We're going to try to get as much information out there as we possibly can.
Hey, Roger, I have a letter about to go to the president's counsel, since he's the office of counsel is supposed to be reviewing the plan. Does that make any sense, or am I wasting my time?
No, I think that's a good idea. So this is, you'd be sending it to David Warrington?
Yes.
Well, if you will, you can get my contact information from Tyler. If you get me a copy of the letter, I will follow up with Warrington on it. I know him very well. He's a very good man, and he is deeply committed to carrying out what the president wants done rather than what the bureaucrats want done. There is a one January 6th detainee, someone who was not involved in any violent offense, someone who simply refused to become an informant. But he was outside the Capitol, didn't assault anybody, didn't enter the Capitol, didn't assault a police officer, didn't destroy any public property. Yet they have moved him to 5 prisons since he was pardoned, and they refused to honor his pardon. He's a decorated Green Beret, a Master Sergeant in the U.S. Army, and they're torturing him. So I'm working very closely with Warrington to try to get him sprung. So I'm in regular touch with them anyway. So, Larry, I'd be happy to follow up on your letter.
Okay,
and
great.
I'm going to call Tim Burchett when we hang up tell him that we have his back.
Yeah, we're actually on JFK Facts Thursday night. You know, we had like 100 people on. And we're basically, as they say, we're unleashing the dogs. We're telling everybody to call their congresspeople to sign on to that Dear Colleague letter.
All right, that's great. That's terrific. All right. I appreciate being with you. God bless you all, and fight the power.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that a lot, Roger, and Tyler as well. Again, Tyler, go ahead and let us know. That's going to be on WABC.com, correct?
That's right. WABC is going to be from 3 to 6 Eastern. They'll probably be the first half hour we have scheduled Roger and Al colloquy, and then at 3:30 to 4:30 it's going to be Doug Horn. Then 4:30 to 5:30 it's going to be Brian Edwards and, of course, the great Gary Shaw discussing the Roscoe White case. And hopefully there's so much material to go over. Hopefully we can I've got a Gary and Brian, I got a big email about to go out to you just to kind of give you a heads up that, you know, it's a fast-paced show. It's and there's going to be commercial breaks, so you'll have to probably reformat a little bit the presentation, which is amazing and excellent. And it's just it's a shame that we can't do a visual component, but nevertheless, I think that's a real home run in both instances, having Doug Horn and then you two guys on. So it'll be a great show, and you can stream it live. I think whatever WABC's website is, and they usually post it as a podcast as well, so you'll be able to hear it. Hear it again later if you happen to miss either of the segments.
All right, perfect. Well, again, Tyler, I want to say thanks again, and you know, it was a pleasure having Roger on. I know there was I want to just, you know, switch gears for a quick second. I know we had a few people in the Zoom call that, you know, might have been offended by Mr. Stone being on with us, but I want to say this. You know, we're in this fight as researchers together. And, you know, Roger being a researcher himself, an author of JFK-related books, we don't always have to agree with each other. But if we have the infighting going on, we're never – I mean, that's what the powers that be wants us to do. If we're fighting with ourselves, we can't be a group that's going to try to fight the establishment to get the information that should have already been released decades ago. So, you know, I like I say, I know that – you know, certain guests may rub people the wrong way, but you kind of have to put that shit aside, and you need to look at the bigger, broader picture. And, you know, even Larry stated in the comments, and, you know, I got to point this out, you know, whether you love somebody, you hate them, you tolerate them, whatever the case is, he is an ally when it comes to the JFK information, the research on this. So, you know, if you decide that you know, don't want to hear somebody, you can put your head in the sand, you can leave the meeting, whatever you want to do, you know, that's your right. You have the freedom to do that. If you decide you'd like to come back into the room after a certain speaker leaves, you're more than welcome back. But, you know, we've got to look at the bigger picture, folks. And unfortunately, you know, that's not always, you know, everybody's cup of tea, but, you know, I want to say again, if Roger Stone ever wants to come on our show in the future, he is more than welcome, just as well as other guest speakers are more than welcome. And as a matter of fact, you've got a researcher like Doug Horn, Brian Edwards, and J. Gary Shaw. They're going to be doing his show tomorrow. Are you going to, you know, not tune in because you may not like the host? We can't – what was the old saying? You can't make everybody happy all the time, only certain people some of the time, or something to that line. Don't quote me on that because I'm sure I got that shit wrong. But
David, if I may jump in here real quick, Larry, and then you – you know, Cyril Wecht was a lifelong tried-and-true Democrat, a Kennedy Democrat, and he embraced Roger. I mean, I was physically there with them when he thanked Roger for all Roger did. Cyril's a class act. I know that Doug Horn stated up front that, you know, he totally disagrees with Roger's politics and with the President Trump's politics. He doesn't want to discuss that, but you know what he said, but I would love to come on, and this is a great opportunity to, you know, to air this information. And Roger's giving that platform to, you know, three of the great researchers. And of course, Gary Shaw. I mean, Roger was thrilled at the opportunity to have Gary on, especially. You know, I think the vituperation and the nasty comments, it's like, you know, we need to start putting this stuff aside and working towards the common good. I mean, this is, it's unnecessary. And people can say what they want of Roger Stone. I've known him for, you know, well over a decade and worked very closely with him. And the lies and the smears and the defamation that have been peddled about this man are unconscionable. And people are propagandized, and frankly, they don't know the truth. And, you know, it's the same people who have been persecuting people like Stone and Trump and turning the government into a weapon and the justice system into a farce who are the ones who have withheld the truth from this country for the last six decades, and frankly are the same ilk who were behind the assassination of the President Kennedy, as well as Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. So I've never understood this sort of schizophrenia amongst people who would sign off on big government when then it just makes no sense to me. I mean, President Trump, you can hate him till kingdom come, but he's doing what we've tried to have done and unsuccessfully under every Democrat that's served since Kennedy. So, you know, get off it, I guess, is all I can say.
And we know
very well said, Tyler. Appreciate that.
We know from the records I got from my lawsuit that, you know, President Biden, he allegedly signed his orders. I don't think he actually did. The NSC basically did what they wanted to do and then gave him a document to sign. We have, with Roger Stone, you have to understand, we have a person that could speak directly to the president who has the ultimate authority as commander-in-chief to do what it's his decision to certify release. So all the stuff, I went through Congress, I contacted, all kinds of parties to try to get President Biden to do the right thing, and there was a wall around him. You couldn't get to him. And then he just signed the order that the NSC drafted for him, which was to postpone the records using transparency plans. By the way, remember, when the JFK Act was passed in 1992, Congress passed it because the records would not be released until 2029. Do you know that the transparency plans that President Biden approved that were written by the NSC and the CIA and the FBI will not call for the records to be reviewed for release until the 2040s, which is later than the date that Congress was concerned about? So I just want to say we have an ally that has the ear of the president on this one limited issue. I got Jeff Morley to finally go on Tucker Carlson. And Jeff,
yeah, two quick things, David, if I may just jump in also. People don't know this. I grew up with Joe Biden. I literally went to school with Hunt Biden and Beau Biden in high school. I've known that family. I've sat in church with Joe Biden every Sunday since 1982, and I've known him very up close. I've watched him from, living in Delaware, growing up in Delaware. My mother knew him back in high school. Joe Biden, for anybody who thinks that is going to bash either Roger Stone, President Trump. I mean, Joe Biden is a criminal, and I'll just say that straight up. And he absolutely was working to undermine any release. I guess that's balanced by Senator Bill Roth, who chaired the Governmental Affairs Committee that heard the ARRB Act, the Act and the JFK Records Release Act. He chaired that committee. And he helped shepherd that legislation through. But Joe Biden was no friend of that. And frankly, has empowered the people who've withheld it, which is kind of sad because Joe Biden, when he ran for president in 1987, before he dropped out after being a complete plagiarist and trying to appropriate someone else's life story in the case of Neil Kinnock, but he used to talk about, just because they slayed our leaders and our heroes doesn't mean that the dream has died. All this nonsense that he was just claptrap from him. When it came down to it, he has no interest and no concern and no care about who really killed John F. Kennedy or Robert F. Kennedy or Martin Luther King. So, President Trump, I think, honestly, he's brought a Kennedy into his administration. I mean, people who are continually bashing him, I think TDS is a real thing, and it's sad to see it here. So I've said my piece. That's all I'm going to say about that. And I appreciate Roger taking the time. He's extremely he's got a lot of demands on him because he has the access to the president, and he came on here today and he's giving us that access, that direct access. And frankly, Trump wouldn't care about the JFK assassination were it not for Roger Stone. So there we are. And I appreciate, Larry, your comments as well. And you've made great points, and send me that letter. I'll get it right into Roger's hands.
Great. Thanks. I also want to say that we're going to have to get legislation passed because the president has statutory authority to release some things. Like what he doesn't have authority to is the deed of gifts. And the deed of gifts, the most important ones we're looking at, are the William Manchester interview notes with Jackie and Bobby. And obviously the IRS records. The president cannot release those records. So we're going to need Congress to act. And the great thing about this letter is that this is a bipartisan letter. For a year, Swigert and Cohen were trying to do stuff, but they weren't talking to each other because they both perceived each other as political opponents. And we were able to get them together to sign a letter. This is incredibly, in this day and age, to have a bipartisan letter is incredible accomplishment. So once again, and we're hoping that this is going to serve as a model for legislation to get David Swigert's bill through Congress. So just closing, when you Monday morning, the first thing you do is call up your representative, and you can look up their district office or the Washington office. You're going to get some intern that's not going to know anything about the Kennedy assassination or anything. But that's why the phrase you have to use is you're calling, you're a constituent, this is very important to you, and you're calling to ask whoever the representative is to sign on to the Dear Colleague letter of Senator Swigert, Congressman Swigert and Congressman Cohen about the RFK, MLK, and JFK records. David, with that, I'm happy to take questions, by the way. There's lots of other interesting jurisdictional questions.
Well, yeah, and I've got a few questions for you as well, because I've had people reach out by text, phone call, and email. Let's first off say that, yes, working together, the bipartisan letter, the fact of, even depending on, whether you're a Republican, Democrat, independent, or even if you don't vote, we're trying to, come together on this because, again, if we are separated, then we're not going to get things done. But the people and the questions that I've got that's been coming to me is with the executive order that has been signed, what does this do for, the lawsuit that we've talked about for the last basically, year and a half, 2 years on the show here with you and Peter and Bill? What does this do now? I mean, is the lawsuit still alive and well? Is it now going to be taking a different turn? Obviously, you want to keep the pressure on, the government in order to get the documents released. And especially like you need a gift and so on. So what's that landscape kind of look like? I know you can't give, minute details, but what does the landscape look like now of kind of where your case is going?
Well, again, remember, our case is twofold. One is to release the records in the collection. But the second part of it was to complete the search requests that the ARB made when they went out of business that were never done. So we have, there was a memorandum of understanding among the ARB, the National Archives, and the CIA to continue to search for certain records that the ARB requested, because the ARB ran out of business. The ARB did not finish their work. They ran out of time. Congress would not authorize any further funding. So the fact that the ARB went out of business in 98 does not mean that their work was done. It wasn't. They were negotiating with the RFK Family Trust to get the records that Bobby took out of the White House Oval Office an hour after the assassination. So even if all the records from the collection are released, our lawsuit still is asking for an injunction to require the agencies to finish the rest of these searches. Now, President Trump could, in his order, instruct them to complete those searches. If President Trump does that and the order is sufficiently broad enough to encompass all the things that we want, then maybe the lawsuit becomes moot. Now, there's a couple of things and this is really for Tyler, just to let you know. NBC has records. Now, I noticed the president just was able, the FCC is getting a transcript of 60 Minutes transcript with Kamala Harris. NBC has materials from Walter Sheridan, who was Bobby's right-hand man, who conducted his own investigation for Bobby and also worked for NBC in connection with the Garrison trial. The ARB was trying to get those files. They actually sued the Sheridan estate to get them, and then the Sheridan estate gave the records, the materials, to NBC, who then pushed back. So NBC has those records. The NBC has the Darnell film, which some people think might be evidence of showing Oswald in the entry. I'm not saying whether I believe that or not, but if that film could be digitized and analyzed, that might help answer some questions. So there are other records, and then there's the Carlos Marcello alleged confession tape when he was in jail in the Cantex sting operation. There's a sealed tape sitting somewhere in the Fifth Circuit courthouse or records of him allegedly confessing. That's been sealed. So there are, and then we have the records that we discovered from the Heath memo that was this, that was released, I think, in 21. We never knew who wrote the memo. We discovered who it was, Donald Heath, after he died. They gave us his name. Apparently, the CIA conducted an investigation in Miami over the weekend of the assassination, interviewed a whole bunch of Cubans. The CIA had always denied they did that. And he said that he, as late as 73, he saw the situation reports in some guy's office in the CIA. We have no idea if they ever, if the ARB ever got access or even was able to search for those records. So there's a lot of things that the president can instruct the agencies to search for. And that's part of what I'm going to be saying in the letter to the council.
You know, we might throw in Roscoe White's diary. What the hell? Why not? I mean,
well, so that is that in private possession? Someone's private.
Well, I mean, it's according to Ricky, as far, and I'll let, I mean, Brian or Gary speak to this, but as I understood, an FBI agent showed up and walked away with it.
So if it's not,
well, Brian's Gonzmo, but Gary's online with us here.
So if it's not in possession of the federal government, it's going to be a...
Not officially, but I mean...
Right. I mean, they could look for it, but we may need to get, and maybe the president has to propose legislation, I don't know, but we may need to give additional authority to search for things that are not in federal possession. Now, just like, but what I'm thinking, just like the FCC put pressure on CBS, maybe this way put pressure on NBC, and maybe who has the Roscoe right... White materials. Anyway, those are things to think about. We have to think about how to get to them.
All right. Well, perfect. Yeah, I'm gonna call on Gary. For those of you that don't know the story of that, the diary, Gary, just give us a quick rundown of when the FBI agent showed up. And you can find out information about this in the book Admitted Assassins, written by J. Gary Shaw, Brian Edwards, along with Ricky White. The book gone missing after the FBI shows up. Give us a little bit of background on that, Gary.
Well, real quickly, the FBI came after interviewing, interrogating is more like it, Ricky for hours. They sent him home with his materials, including the diary, which they had made copies of. He had watched them make copies of there in the FBI office in Midland, Texas. And the FBI agent came back stating that he left something with Ricky's materials and he needed to pick it up. She went to tell Ricky about it, and when she came back, the FBI guy was leaving, and he said, I got what I came for. And about a week later, they realized that the diary had suddenly disappeared.
So what they basically came back for was that diary, but making copies of that diary, as the FBI agent is an acting government official at that point making copies, wouldn't those copies have to be somewhere? I mean, unless they were destroyed, wouldn't those have to be somewhere that we could search for?
That's our claim. And we filed, Ricky filed Freedom of Information request through Bud Finsterwald. We did everything we could to get them to admit that they took the diary or had the diary at one time. They deny it.
But they denied that.
The FBI has never lied before in this case. So, you know, if they say they don't have the diary, we're supposed to believe it.
So you filed a FOIA request
in
the FBI office in Dallas, and they claim they didn't have a copy of that diary.
We filed in the Dallas office, the Midland office, and with the Washington, D.C. headquarters. Mm. We filed it all three.
Mm. Well, that's the problem. A lot of records have been destroyed, so.
Yes.
It's astonishing what, what becomes. I mean, that's a new document on its own the moment they made a copy of that, even if the original is no longer available. It boggles the mind of, you know, the last 60-plus years of what other information was a new document or, you know, a copy of the original that's either gone missing, could be in the archives or in a institution's like the ABC institution's records that we just don't have. And for some reason, they don't want to play ball by sharing with the other kids at the playground.
And this is one of the problems. When I talk to young people, you know, the Kennedy assassination is as far from the young people's lives today as World War One was to when I was in school, right?
Yeah.
So the reason I tell them that this is a current, this is not a purely historical event, because as long as people, as long as government officials' decisions and papers can be withheld from the public, they don't have to fear making any corrupt, illegal, or wrongful decisions. What they don't want is to be embarrassed and to have, unless we can, there was a Supreme Court justice that once said, sunlight is the best disinfectant. And there are people that have lied. People haven't been punished for wrongfully destroying records like the Secret Service did in 1995 when they were asked for the security trip assessments in fall 63. Unless these records are put to light and the bureaucrats are going to continue to lie and deceive us, they have to understand that their decisions and their, you know, whatever they do is eventually going to come to the public, to the light of the public. And that could help reform the government. So, you know, it may be too late to punish the people that destroyed the records because they may be dead. But I think we need to do something so to make sure this stops so that the government becomes more responsive to us going forward.
Well, let me ask Gary, do we know the identities of the agents that interrogated Ricky?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So, do you know if they're still alive?
I'm not sure whether they are or not.
Okay.
They have denied it, of course.
Of course. Uh-huh. Well, maybe they've, you know, age has, they've seen wisdom. And unless they've James Hosteed the stuff James G. Vangleton showed up at Mary Pinchot Meyer's house while, you know, her body was not even cold yet to grab her diary. And I'm sure that was disappeared into oblivion, but... You know, they did make copies of it, and there is a point there that they were pretty buttoned down. They might have been ordered to do that, but that doesn't mean they would have destroyed the documents or it was a rogue operation necessarily. So I don't know. It's worth maybe a little thread I could run down a little bit.
They may have told their kids about something, and maybe the kids want to get their name. There's a lot of people that want to play.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe just give them a call and say, look, I represent President Trump, and you better fess up to what happened, or we're going to stick Roger Stone on you.
I was thinking more. There are a lot of people that want to be like the Forrest Gump of the JFK assassination. They were all right. So sometimes that works. Whatever the angle is, it works. You always, as you know, as a lawyer, you got to figure out what acupuncture points to press. So, David, do you have any more questions that people ask?
That was really the overall of, well, one wanting to have us. You know, they've been demanding. And I must apologize. I mean, we just wrapped up the conference in November. December and January was going back to school, and I had a few I had a little health scare I'm not going to get into, but that kind of put me on a sidetrack. You know, they were demanding us to come back on, and why the hell haven't we done a show for the month of December and January? So we are back on top again, and you know, sometimes we have to pause for other shit that happens in life, but
yeah. But David, you did something. But the most important thing was when the executive order was released, you on a last minute thing scheduled the show. So we had no real news report about it until the order dropped.
Right.
We had no idea when the president was going to act.
Well, and the other thing is, we will be coming back on for another meeting. And it may be so. Look for the email. Look for the website. I can't stress this enough. If something comes out on a Friday, expect me to go online and send out an invite. We're going to have a meeting because something just dropped on this. We've got to keep the public informed, the researchers informed, not just the ones that are here today, but also the ones that we have on YouTube, and our website that comes out, and maybe they can't join us because of either time constraints, family obligations, but you know, the replays are on there. For a reason. So that way it's not just held in our tight little group of less than, you know, 50, sometimes less than 100 people. This goes out to thousands of people. So we've got to get the information out there. We not only want to be having the government be transparent, but also us as researchers transparent on the fact of what are we doing and where are we going. And if the government happens to look at us, wanting to have information, hey, I invite them to come to the website or YouTube and look and see what we're doing, what we're talking about, because they should know, you know, I like transparency on both sides. And sometimes when we come in, well, most of the time we come into this format, we're asking those hard questions. Now, we may not be directing them directly at a government official, but we are asking those questions amongst ourselves, amongst the researchers that, you know, choose to watch us or take part in the information that we're trying to put out there to, you know, to get to the bottom of this. You know, I know we were asked at the conference. You know, they want to know, are we going to continue doing a conference in Dallas every year? You know, we're at 61 years. Is it still viable? Is it still important? Hell yes, it's viable. Yes, it's important. We don't have the, you know, we don't have all the records. Even when we do go to all the records, does that mean that, you know, we're done? No, we're still going to be asking questions. We're still going to be following leads and running down leads of what's in those documents and what still has been released.
David, I got a question. I just remembered I have to ask Tyler. Or mention to Tyler. We have a sensitive issue with the RFK records. I mean, I've known Bobby Jr. for a long time as an environmental lawyer, and I was an elector for him for New York State. But I've never had the opportunity to raise this very sensitive question, which is, you know, his father took records from the White House. I believe Douglas. I don't know. There are two of his siblings are now the trustees of the family trust that holds title to those records. We got to figure a delicate way to work with. So what the ARB did, the ARB was in the process of saying, if you turn these documents over to us, we won't deem them to be assassination records. But we got to figure out. I think if Bobby's already estranged from his siblings, we got to figure out a way. How do we get to the RFK Family Trust to get those records released? Because a lot of them are probably going to deal with Cuba, and they can be. The president can declassify them, but they have to be put in. You know, they were taken out. They're not in any federal record right now.
So yeah, unfortunately, it feels like the family stood in the way as much as the government has in many ways.
Yeah, well,
they're. And they have total unilateral autonomy as far as that goes. So
right,
you know, we can't FOIA them or sue them really. And it's sad because it provided cover, frankly, for the cover up.
Right, and I think some of it is because some of the records in that were taken probably would have put JFK in not a pleasant light because of the shenanigans that were going on. But there's obviously records there that potentially could shed light on. You know, was this involved with Cuba or something, the assassination? So we just got to put our head together. What's the best way to get these records released? Because we can't get them under the JFK Act now because they're subject to a deed of trust. And, you know, we have to convince the family. Now, we heard that as long as Ethel was alive, they were going to be held back. But she died this year.
I don't know. Maybe we could get creative, like eminent domain.
But we got to put our head together. How we can try to access this, because that's another batch of records that needs to be released.
Look, the government has seized all sorts of things that are of national importance, and particularly historical records. So, like, they, you know, it happens all the time. I mean, if the Kennedy family doesn't want to play ball, I mean, I'm sure President Trump won't, like, again, if he releases these records and the Kennedy family's withholding it and Bobby Jr., you know, is on board with it, who knows what? I mean, it's a whole different game now. There's no establishment protectionism is at an end. I mean, he's firing people like, I mean, I never watched The Apprentice, but man, he is just totally purging the FBI and all these people in the DOJ who've been the bulwark of secrecy and sort of, you know, keeping the same line of power that's basically descended from LBJ. I mean, they're just getting hosed.
When the ARB sued the chairman in the state, once NBC got involved, Clinton's Department of Justice was very afraid of being viewed as suing, you know, a major journalism entity for records.
Yeah.
And so we're in a different world now. And so, you know, I still think that why should if David wants to air footage of an NBC interview with you know, one of the doctors, that NBC wants an enormous amount of money per minute. That should be a historical document.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and also, you like Walter Sheridan. Yeah. Well, I mean, he was in the FBI and the CIA. Who knows if he wasn't still working for the company on some level when he did all, you know, work for NBC. I mean, we know about Operation Mockingbird. So, I mean, there's a lot of connections that could be drawn there to justify, you know, again, a government, you know, getting a court order or just, you know, executive order or whatever it takes. I mean, like I said, I think things are going to be a lot different moving forward in terms of these establishment bulwarks that have withheld the truth and propagated lies for so long.
I'm respectful of the First Amendment. I'm a very strong advocate of First Amendment. When it comes to the JFK assassination, they're hiding behind it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we don't have a free press to withhold truth and to propagandize and lie to us. So,
anyway,
it's on principle, you know.
David, I'm finished. As long as we have 25 people on here, hopefully every one of you calls your congressperson on Monday, and maybe we can get 100 people to sign this letter.
Well, as my college professor would say, that's your homework week. That's your weekend homework. Look that shit up. Make that phone call come Monday morning, and you know we've got to. At that point, we've got to keep the pressure. I see Ron's got his hand up. Ron, you got a question for Larry or Tyler?
Actually, this is directed to. This may be Pollyannish, but when you have your conference, is there a possibility of like joining forces with the Lancer conference so you would get a bigger audience?
Well, I tell you what, we have had some discussions about that. Me and David have. I don't want to put that out in the audience as well. But you know, it's the fact of, you know, I don't want to pat ourselves on the back so damn hard we break our arm. But we are doing our conferences, and you have to understand. I've been involved with Lancer for 10 years. Unfortunately, Lancer is a shell of what it used to be.
Okay.
You know, Kappa with Cyril passing away this past year. I don't know. I can't speak for these other conferences I wish them the best. I think that, you know, everybody should be doing what they can. At this moment in time, Ron, I know we're full steam ahead with what we're doing, and I like the fact that we're getting the turnouts that we're getting. And we're going to continue putting out a quality conference, a quality product, you know, for you know, current and future generations to, you know, to look at. So
okay.
I appreciate that comment, Ron.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Speaking of, let's go ahead and switch gears again. I tell you what, it's like driving my old 10-speed, you know, commercial vehicles, my trucks I used to drive. We're always changing gears, and there's always another gear to grab until, oh, shit, there's none left. And then we start over again. But let's go ahead and I want to go ahead and do a recap. David Denton is online with us, and we're going to do a little bit of a recap of what we did back in November, just a couple months ago. We had the 61st conference. Our 61st anniversary conference on the JFK assassination, and we also covered RFK, MLK, and one of my highlights is going back to the civil rights with Medgar Evers. So we had a large group in Dallas. It was a great turnout. We had quite a bit of people on Zoom as well. We want to continue seeing that going forward in the future. We're going to continue doing this until, you know, the last question is answered, it looks like, or at least until we're still alive on this mortal coil. With that, I'm going to bring David on. Dave, you know, go ahead and, you know, let everybody know kind of where we're at, what you feel was some highlights of the conference. We definitely had a great turnout with our medical panel. I know I say it all the time. I know originally we were kind of against the idea of panels, but you know our audience loves panel discussions, and it gives an opportunity to kind of have meetings of the minds. And every year I've worked with the fact of going, what can we do for a different panel? In the last 3 years since we basically took over the Dallas conference, our first year we had a group on on the book with Jay Gary Shaw, Casey Quinlan, Leslie Sharp, and Alan Kent. That was a great panel. The year before, we had Jay Gary Shaw, Brian Edwards, and Ricky White. And Ricky hadn't spoke in public, really, since his time back in the 90s. And that was a hell of a kickstart for the Admitted Assassins book, written by those three as well. And then last year, just a couple months ago, for 2024, we had the medical panel, which involved David Mantic, Mike Chesser, and also Doug Horn. And Doug had not spoke at one of our – I take that back. He spoke at the conference at my college in the spring, and we had a very small audience, but we had a way larger audience, and he was able to how should we say, he went on for a little longer than what we planned, but he gave out some great information, great reception of his work and his ideas and his PowerPoints. But yeah, I mean, just as a recap, I think where we're going, where we've been and where we're going, we're on the right track. And with the new information that's coming out, I'm hoping that we get some renewed interest from the research community, from the public at large, and especially younger generation researchers, you know, high school, college kids, hell, even middle school or junior high, and people that maybe we look at a time frame. You know, if you're in our group, age group here, you know, we're heavy into this. The younger generation are just getting involved, and then you've got your older generation that remembers a lot of this, or they've researched, but now they're coming back into the fold. Why? Because we're putting out a quite a bit of information, whether it's on here in our Zoom meetings or whether we're doing it in conferences, getting people back to the research, back to the information that's coming out. And we've got to do that in order to keep this case alive. It just, the case can't die with us. You know, history cannot be remembered. We can't be remembered in history of, well, we gave it the best fight and, you know, nobody picked up the torch and passed it on. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to get the younger people involved in this in order to make this case relevant in 20, 30, 50, 100 years. It needs to stay relevant. And as long as we continue talking about it, you know, the case will never die. The story will never die. And people can't give up on that. So I'm gonna have Dave come on, and he's got some words to share with us and some ideas of kind of where we're going, you know, this fall. Dave, go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And you gave a pretty good synopsis of what went on in Dallas in November. I thought it was a pretty successful effort. We always put a great deal of time into it. You cannot, you know, underestimate the organizational factor that has to go into this, and without Project JFK and Dave Knight in particular, and JFK Conference LLC, all three of those collaborated. Our good friend Don Ratliff, who's also been a big part of this, and I think we put on a good effort, as you mentioned, Doug Horn. The medical panel were highlights because a lot of folks had not seen, particularly Doug, and his information, a lot of respect for what he's done. A lot of other great researchers and people we've had in the past. And, yeah, going forward, obviously the subject of what we've been talking about here today is paramount in our minds about the new documents potentially being released and what we can get our hands on. You know, I would just point out that in the last few years, for folks that have been, and we put out a press release on that this week, that even the documents so far that have came out, if one is willing to look, there's some critical things that have come out since 2017. So you have to feel like that what's left may be more significant. We don't know. We can't until we actually see it in terms of sensitivity. And I think that's going to be a key potential topic for Dallas in November and bring that forward. I know, you know, we're excited about it here on this campus and what we might be able to do. We've dealt with documents a lot already, as I said. I've already got a working group of college students ready to go. We're just hopefully something is put in front of us that we can have a chance to look at, investigate, and find some greater truth and justice in this case. I think that's what we're all looking for. And just be looking for information. You know, Dave and I will collaborate and talk about what our plans are for November. And we're certainly planning on being there, and we're certainly looking forward to continue to pursue the truth and where it's at. And hopefully the document release, if it happens, and we're all, has reservations and skepticism about what we may or may not see, but we're hopeful. And Dave, thanks for giving me a little bit of time on that. And hopefully we'll be able to pull off another good one this November, right, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I know that Dave touched on this, but, for me and him in particular, we just finished the conference. We take a month break, Dave, and we're right back on the thinking of what the hell are we going to do for, what do you feel we're going to do for next year? And, automatically the ideas start swirling around. Who are we going to get to speak? And, there's never a problem for us, at least, and it's a damn good problem not to have. We always have plenty of speakers that want to come out and speak at the conference. Now, we don't always have a time slot for them, but, we're looking at maybe implementing something this coming up year where, we can get some, I don't want to say new blood, but that's kind of what it is. We want to keep the conference fresh. If you come out to our conference and it's the same conference year after year with the same speakers and the same topic or the same presentations, that shit gets old, and you're not going to want to see, you're not going to want to lay down your money and your time to come out and be part of our conference. But, the last 3 years, especially for Dallas, I know the conference that we've done at my community college here in Kansas City, and even the ones up in Olney, Illinois, there's always there's always something fresh, something new to see and people to meet. So I definitely want to encourage everybody to keep your eyes on the JFKHistorical.com website for announcements to be made, and also projectjfk.com. And me and David will be working behind the scenes, putting on another great lineup, and we'll have another successful conference. But we won't have it successful if we don't have you, the audience, to come out and support the group and support the conference. So you show your support by taking part, spending your hard-earned dollars to come out to our conference, and getting a chance to be part of the historical record. I want to encourage everybody to keep an ear out, an eye out, and we'll have some great information to share, and hopefully with the document release that is imminent, we'll have some people picking that shit out of pepper, to quote the movie JFK, to share with our attendees and our audience, both live and on Zoom. So with that, Dave, time to grab another gear, buddy. I will be giving you a call here shortly, either probably tomorrow or Monday. I know Brian had to leave us earlier. He's got a electrical issue, so you always got to spend money when you own a house. But I've got Casey Quinlan with us, the founder of Project G at KCSI Dallas. Casey, why don't you let everybody know how things are going? I know you have sunk into your new domicile, your new home, and you're getting your office set up. Too bad your office doesn't look like what your background does. I mean, mine doesn't either, but we can always hope and dream. How's things going with what you're researching? And also, you've got a new person that was your neighbor from across the street that's coming in to see our performance today, our show. It's all about reaching out to even if it's just one individual, a new person to come in and see what we're doing, then you're doing your part, and I hope everybody does that. So Casey, go ahead and take it away, buddy.
Thanks, David. I'll tell you what, it has been a while since our organization has had any has been on the air for a while, but there's a lot of reasons for that. I'm broadcasting today, and I have fledged with COVID. I have COVID. I've taken all my shots. I follow the government rules and regulations, and it doesn't make any difference. Hell, I got it right now. So does my wife. But we did move. We moved from our one house. We downgraded to a mobile home, and God bless. I tell you what, it's been a great move for us economically and also physically. Hell, I just turned 75, and I'm just sitting there thinking, my God, are there other people out there that are still wanting to do research on the murder of John F. Kennedy? And there are. There are a lot of people that are coming into view. You know, I haven't totally given up on the youth of today, but part of what is going on with the youth of today is our education system is totally screwed up. Teachers don't teach. Now, when you get to the AP level, at the high school level, they teach, okay? But everybody else underneath there, from all the way from grade school, well, I can't say grade school, but I'm going to say from middle level to high school, it's all monitored. And I got tired of that quick when I was subbing for about 2 or 3 years. I just said, I can't handle this situation. I said, nobody teaches anymore. Nobody teaches what is supposedly in the book. Nobody teaches American history. Nobody teaches government. Nobody teaches civics. Now, they have courses for that, but you need to sit in on those courses to figure out what's going on. So as a teacher for close to 50 years, I'm totally disgusted with the education system. And it's not just in Kansas or Missouri. It's all over the United States. And I remember years ago when one of our principals came in and says, we're going to change the education system. And the thought at the time was that we're going to dumb down education. Well, I'm not sure if that's the word, but we have. We have put history, we put government, we put economics, God forbid, but we have put those things on remote, and I think all we're doing right now, and all you have to do is get on TV, get on TV and figure out what we're selling out there. We're selling gambling, okay? You know, people are going to gamble. There's no doubt in my mind. But at the same time, we are promoting gambling. We are promoting. I mean, I'm from Kansas City, and I believe that the Kansas City Chiefs are one of the best football teams in pro football. But God bless, we've got a major scandal going on with referees and lying and cheating and stuff like that. And they're saying, well, is this persistent in professional sports? Well, my brother sometimes relates the pro football to professional wrestling, and I would sit back and I said, I don't want to go there, and I don't want to go to the professional boxing and all those entities that I grew up with. A lot of those things are changing, and they're changing for the worst. And the bad part about it is the rules, the regulations are being bent. And so what we see in our society is that nobody really cares too much about what happened in the past, okay? They want to look forward to what's going on in the future, okay? Now, it's going to be people like us that are still hanging on to what we firmly believe is the American system, the democratic system, the democratic republic that we grew up in. But if our kids are not getting that at the middle school level and at the high school level, and if we expect our kids to know that, then they're going to have to know it on their own, because there's no teachers that want to teach in that system anymore, because it's all monitored. You monitor the thing and say, this is what you're going to do, this is what you have to do, and if you fail at it, you can keep passing it until – I keep taking the test until you pass it with 70%. And you don't learn anything that way. You learn how to rig the system. And I think that's what's going on in our society today. And I think people think that throughout every aspect about what's going on. People are more associated with making the money. Not that, I mean, we live in an economic society. But at the same time, what is going to be out there for the future of our kids? And somewhere down the line, we're going to have to change that system. I'm not one that's going to change it because I'm 75 years old and I'm just pissed off at the damn education system. And that's, like I said, it's just not in Missouri and Kansas, but it's all over the United States. And the idea that we're going to let kids teach themselves, give me a goddamn break. Jeez, let them teach themselves about what? Okay? You have to have a basis of knowledge about what is going on with history. What's going on with government? And government changes so much that I just begin to wonder, even if we ask the President of the United States today if he actually follows the Constitution, I'm not even sure if he even read it. The bad part about it is I'm not, you get learned individuals on here like Larry Schnapp, and I have a tremendous respect for Larry. I have a tremendous respect for Larry Rivera. And all of the other people who are online here, Gary Shaw, yeah, 100%. But I know most of us are old school. But the bad part about it is the new school technology is hit and miss. You either hit it, and if you miss it, then you go on. And I guess that's not necessarily bad, but for God's sake, for us that are trying to figure out how this system functions, how it works, how we work through the system, how we get answers. Wow, I mean, it's a scary situation, and I know for myself, I have to call on my younger colleague, David Knight, because I don't know everything about technology, and David will come over and he'll say, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do that, or I'll call Larry Rivera, and they'll hook me up, and God forbid that I would call Gary Shaw, because Gary Shaw is probably more in the dark on technology than I am, but I may not be. I'm not sure, Gary, because I'm not going to put you in that situation. But it's the idea that, yeah, we need to change. But at the same time, when we need to change, we need an explanation of how we are changing, how it's going to affect us, and how we're going to get there. But everything is just so fast. Everything is just so fast, and it changes from Monday to Tuesday. And it's crazy. But at the same time, if I feel like or you guys feel like I'm a 75-year-old man that's griping and bitching right now, well, I am. But at the same time, we've been 61 years into the murder of John F. Kennedy. Where have we gotten? I mean, I think we've gotten a tremendous amount with people like Larry Schnapp and I'm not a big fan of Roger Stone, but I do understand the compliment that he gives us, and we need to look at all sides. But at the same time, I hate to say this, but I think he's on our side, and whatever side that is, and I think it's the finding out the truth. So with organizations like we started here, in fact, this organization, Project JFK, was started in 1974, and we brought it into the school system, and that's where we are today. And I'm positive that we're going to find some answers with the new releases if they're actually released. And I commend all those people who are watching today and into this, but at the same time, realize that there are some fantastic researchers out there, and those fantastic researchers and writers are doing their best. I mean, I got a pat Larry Rivera on the back. I got a pat J. Gary Shaw. These guys have dedicated their lives to this, and like David, myself, and Brian have, and Larry Schnapp, and all you guys who tune in on this. We appreciate all the stuff that you're doing. We appreciate that we have a forum where we can open this thing up and talk about what's going on in our society. But at the same time, realize that we've got roadblocks out there. And we got to figure out how to get through those roadblocks, not only on the federal level, but the state and the local level.
Well, Casey, but,
Dave, you got it, buddy.
Casey, you know, I'm only 3 years younger than you, right? So we come from the same generation. I share your frustrations, but I'm still teaching law school, and I have lots of young students, and I think it's easy for us as in our 70s to question the kids, but it's not their fault because they're not being taught properly, right? And I think that when we were kids, you know, TV was the great new technological invention, yeah, right? And it was like our grandparents were being puzzled and befuddled by stuff. So part of this, I think, is generational. And, you know, when we grew up, it wasn't all that great. You know, we look backwards, it seems great. But the other thing is that history is very fungible. There's an old saying that, and I forget who came up with this phrase, but it's like four generations, that history disappears at the four generations unless it gets reintroduced. And I think the kids today, they didn't have a Cold War. You know, they didn't have, they don't know what, when we were kids, our parents or our grandparents would tell us stories about fighting the Nazis and, you know, the fascists and the Japanese World War II, right? These kids don't have those stories to tell them, to make them understand what this country is and how different it is from everything else in the world. So I just want to have a little bit more optimism than you're casting, but I agree with your frustration about, you know, it's been 61 years and our friends are dying without knowing what happened.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to throw in a little philosophical here. You know, Casey mentioned Project JFK has been around since 74. I was born in 74.
Really?
I wasn't born into Project JFK. I didn't come along until 1989. But I want to say, I mean, just in the years that I've been involved with this group, you know, what has happened in the past passes prologue. We've got to change, and we've got to go into a new direction. And luckily, you know, Casey and Brian were behind me 100% in 2018 when I said, we're going to start a ProjectJFK.com website. We're going to go into the new technology because that's how we're going to reach more people. It's not just about that November conference every year, and we don't have an opportunity to sit here and have a program like what we're doing here or the Zoom portions of the Spotlight series. You know, the next logical step, we've got if the kids of today are already having their focus stolen away by social media, then we want to steal a little bit of their focus. Now, I got to admit, I have children. My oldest is 22, my youngest is 14. What's their big thing? How do they, you know, interact with social media? It's TikTok. Now, right, obviously, TikTok right now is quote-unquote off the air, on the air, depends on what device you have and if you happen to have deleted the damn app because now you can't download the app. I fought it tooth and nail. I said, I'm not downloading TikTok. I've got everything else. What the hell do I need TikTok for? Well, guess what? With the closing of TikTok and the fact that the app came back on in a form, kids were losing their fucking minds. Okay, that's the easiest way to say it. I was at you know, my college campus, and you're talking about college kids. I saw my own children, you know, just losing their shit because they deleted the app because it, you know, it was banned, and you know, TikTok did what they were supposed to. They went ahead and shuttered their existence in the USA, and I'm actually in hopes that, you know, we get it to come back on because I have realized through, you know, kids on campus, not kids, young adults on campus, and also my own kids, this is how you reach them. You reach them in small tidbits of information. They can't sit there and go for our 3 and 4 and 5 6 or 7 hour during yeah. meeting. They're not going to hold on that long. They're going to get their information in small, you know, from 30 seconds to 5 minute videos, and they're going to go on to the next one. Well, we've got to steal their focus and bring them into this, because if we reach them on their level, and their level just happens to be technology, happens to be apps like TikTok, we can actually get them to pay attention. You know, how many, I took polls, how many of you, you know, fellow students, or I asked my kids, you know, to ask their friends, do you watch the news? The answer to that question is hell no. It's either because it's too depressing, it's too boring, or they've got other shit to do, such as social media and their friends. Or
they get the news from social media.
Absolutely, and that's
I mean, it's just the way it is now.
Even that just came out in the first. I watched the first press secretary, showing on the TV this week. They're opening up to not just legacy media, because legacy media, let's face it, legacy media is it's in the crapper, folks. They're not as relevant as they used to be, because people get their information from social media. And, you know, this is the way we're going to have to go with this, guys. Whether we like whether us old guys like it or not, I still buy the newspaper. I don't buy it often because, shit, I'm not going to pay $6 for a piece of fucking paper when I can go online and get the same information. I couldn't believe a newspaper in Dallas. We got a hit piece on us. If you haven't read it, I don't want to say don't waste your time, but if you want to see how the legacy media, you know, I'm going to call them out, the legacy media, how they view us as just off the wall fucking nuts, and why we shouldn't be doing this anymore. The ones that speak up and say that, number one, they don't see things like what we're doing. They don't attend our conference. They just group us as a whole in Dealey Plaza during remembrance ceremony going, these guys just need to go away. Well, if we go away, guess what happens, everybody? The younger generation that doesn't know a single tiddly wink shit of this case, that's the best way I can put it at the moment because my brain's going in 20-mile-an-hour directions. If we stop, they win. If we don't get the younger generation involved, they win, because then
the younger generation is not reviewing the Dallas Morning News.
Right. So
they're going to be their audience is us, our generation. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
And that's what was amazing about the election, was that he went around the media and got, you know, this alternative,
You did.
And that just shows you the power, how much the legacy media, you know. And look, even Walter Cronkite, for all his respect, they were controlling what we learned.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the legacy media, even the news. Depending on where you get your news from, whatever network it is, you have talking heads reading a teleprompter that they didn't write. They didn't report.
Right.
Yeah.
They're only regurgitating what the powers that be above them tells them, this is what you're going to talk about.
Until I started going on national TV, and I didn't understand the power of the producers and their critical views. You know, they basically tell the talking heads that the talking heads are just there because they're a pretty face or a handsome face.
Or a great set of legs, depending on what show you're looking at.
But the power, and, you know, I oftentimes ask, why do we go through a Cold War when we have major media telling us what we have to think and say? I mean, how different is this from communism?
That's a very good point.
Very good point. I didn't mean to get us off on a negative thing, but that's okay. You brought us back. Both of you guys brought us back. So that's what a good teacher does, is try to get those people to conjure up something. But at the same time, there is a lot of negativity out there. But at the same time, we do have to progress that, go forward with that. And what I'd like to shift into a little bit
Before you go into that, that is why the Joe Rogans, we're seeing a democratization of news now. That's a good thing, right? The fact that he was able to go around the legacy, this generation has now, there's no controls about accuracy, but there's so much opportunity now that it's hard for some government to censor free speech now, because there's so many platforms. Now that the media platforms have decided, you know, not to censor anymore.
Well, and right. Another thing is, people that get their information from social media, I cannot stress this enough. I got to point this out. social media is great on the fact that at least you're getting news from somewhere and you don't have your head buried in the fucking sand like an ostrich. But the folks that are doing that, they have got to fact check because they're, I mean, granted, I love free speech. Okay, I don't like to stifle free speech in any way, shape, or form. Sometimes I've had to on this show. But it's very limited. But the information that's out there, you need to fact check. And then
I think the answer to bad speech is more speech.
Well, okay, I'll agree with that. But what I mean by that, let me rephrase it. If you hear something and it interests you or it makes you ask a question, then research it.
Right.
Research it more than one source. I mean, minimum three sources. Minimum.
Right. Well, when Casey and I were kids,
three sources and do that.
When Casey and I were kids, we would go to the checkout counter and, you know, the Inquirer was there and Midnight, whatever, that Globe was there.
Yeah, yeah.
How was that different from social media today? You knew when you were reading that, yeah, this is kind of like, you know, you read it for fun. But,
right.
You know, I mean, that's, we just have a lot of, like, National Inquirers now on the social media.
It's the same thing, it's just in a different format. Now
you
get into small bits and small sets.
The answer to bad speech is more speech. You don't censor speech. You just, in the marketplace of ideas, you bring your information. You know, like, look, we have to deal with Fred Litwin, right? The man's a liar and a prevaricator.
Oh, yeah.
That's shit. You got to say, you know, Fred Litwin was talking about the single bullet theory and was talking about the oval wound in Connolly's back, and I said, but that's after the surgery. You know, and he says, big deal.
Yeah.
It is a big deal. You know,
you think, yeah, but that just shows you his lack of allegiance to facts, and I have to point that out. And then that's how you counter people that are liars.
You know what was real interesting? At the Dallas conference, we had a break time to go down to Dealey Plaza and celebrate what we were there to celebrate is the life of President Kennedy and then show the place where he was assassinated. But one of the younger men asked me, he says, well, are you going to go down there? And I said, no, I'm not going to go down. It's going to be a circus down there. And I really don't want to see this as a travesty. And that's old school. But I went down there. I went down there with Larry Rivera, and Larry decided that he wanted to take some pictures in that area, and for very good reasons. But at the same time, I had this young man come up to me, and I was sitting over by where Zapruder was filming, and he says, who are those people down there? Who are those people with the flags? And I said, who do you think they are? And he goes, well, he says, are they the guys that are wanting to bring President Robert Kennedy back and appear on the railroad bridge? And I said, yeah, that's who they are. And he says, are you going to sit there and watch them? And I said, no. But I said, they're right there in front of us. And he goes, well, what do you think they're going to do? And I said, they're going to do a daisy chain with their arms all the way across the street, and then they're going to levitate Dealey Plaza 450 feet in the air, and then poof. It's going to disappear as if it never even existed. And they go, are you serious? And I looked at them. Am I serious? No. No. I said, you need to go back to the 60s and listen to what some of the protesters during the Vietnam War were saying about the Pentagon. Going to raise it. That sounds familiar, doesn't it, Larry? But anyway, there are some very, very good researchers out there. And not only researchers, but writers and people in technology. And Larry Rivera is one of those guys. And I appreciate all the work that all of you guys have done. And I'm going to turn it back to David and see if we can get Larry on here. Appreciate it, buddy.
I thought that Lancer made a major, major mistake in inviting Fred Litwin to speak.
Oh, good Lord.
I told him. It's not about having a different view. It's about having an honest different view.
Yes.
I actually said to them, I cannot attend your conference because you've invited this liar, this man who deliberately distorts, and to promote his book. And, you know, I don't know how their conference went, but I'm done with them after doing that.
You know, I got to tell you, I, I was asked to speak over there, so was Brian, and their conference has gone downhill primarily on the technology point of view, and I love Deborah Conway and all the things that she has done with Larry Hancock and those guys. I love them to death, but at the same time, the conference has gone straight to hell primarily because they don't have David Knight. And David Knight puts on conferences, and he puts them on tremendous professionally. And when he works with David Denton, it's pure and it's very good and it's exciting, and he puts things together. So I'm going to commend him on that. So
it's the quality and also the content. The content is they went off the deep end this year. But anyway.
Yeah, I felt real bad for Bill Simpich when I got there to speak. Bill looked like he was about ready to get up and leave. And and I said, God, Bill, I said, you need to come to our conference. But there's problems with our conference and people not liking certain people. I don't like certain researchers, but at the same time, I have to honor what they've done. And what research they brought out. To me, there are some researchers that are complete assholes, okay? But when I read their book, I go, God dang, did I miss something here? Or should I look at the content, find out where their research is, and then maybe don't talk to the guy, okay?
The problem the community has is that there are many people, like, if you don't agree with their view, they start attacking you personally.
Yes.
And so, you know, as long as someone has, in good faith, pursued an angle, you know, it may disagree with their conclusions, but so long as they've done it in good faith, as opposed to a Fred Littman who's just lying and distorting, that's a separate level. But I have no problem with people coming to you know, to come up, discuss their research, they have a different view. Okay, you know, I may disagree with it, but it's a good faith argument. That's okay. That's what the First Amendment is.
It is.
Okay. Well, guys, I tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to grab another gear. We're going to switch off. I want to introduce Neil Safete, my buddy from across the pond over at Dealey Plaza, UK. He has been on our show in a little while, but I'm glad to have him back with us. And he would like to talk for a few minutes. So, Neil, go ahead and take it away, buddy.
Yeah, thank you, David, for giving me this opportunity. Casey, Larry, we're hanging on in there, this side of the pond. We understand the demographic. It is, you know, is tough. But, you know, there are, you know, on a positive note, there are some young people that are getting into this. I mean, Johnny Cairns, you must all know Johnny Cairns. I mean, he's 30. He's a fantastic researcher. He's passionate. You know, he puts so much into this, and you know, he's one of our most respected members of DP UK. I was at Lancer a few years back. I do agree with you with respect to the audio side. I mean, it didn't compare to. I mean, I attended both your conference at the DoubleTree and the one at wherever Lancer was, and audio wise, it was just dreadful. So I do concur with what you were saying there, but the one I attended for the 60th, you know, there was a young kid called Alex Harris that pitched up, and he's got a great YouTube website. I think it's called the JFK Theorist. This guy's really young and he's really into this. So you know, that's encouraging. You must all know Robbie from Out of the Blank. He does a great podcast. I mean, this guy's in his mid-20s. And Matt Doughtit, he does get a bad press from time to time. You know, he's in his late 20s. He's a Dallasite. And he's really, you know, working very hard on this case at the moment. He's actually debating with the other side, which I'm not that keen on, because the type of people he's debating with is very much questionable. Maybe not quite as questionable as Fred Lipman, but nevertheless, you know, he's really doing some good stuff as well. So, you know, there is some hope, Casey. there is some hope. And this is a nice segue into what I really wanted to talk about. Was we're having a really big event this year in June, midsummer, in the middle of the country, and it's the 30th anniversary of Dealey Plaza UK, and we're trying to make a really big splash this year. It'll be very much a celebration of Ian Griggs. I mean, most of you probably know of Ian Griggs. Most of you probably met Ian Griggs, I suspect, when he went to Dallas for, you know, many, many years. I mean, decades ago. So it's going to be a really good event. It's the biggest thing I've done, actually. Normally I do a 1 or 2 day seminar in York and a 2 day seminar in Canterbury. I've organized a 3 day event this year. In the middle of the country, very close to Warwick, which is a beautiful city with a wonderful castle. It's 10 miles away from Shakespeare's birthplace, which is Stratford-upon-Avon, and another beautiful Georgian town that's kind of like 250 years ago called Lymington Spa. So we've picked a fantastic venue. And again, on the sort of audio-visual video stuff, this is actually a professional a venue that organises events for corporations, for corporates. So we are going to have the greatest audio-visual capability and facilities. So the reason I'm talking about this is because I'm reaching out to all of you and anybody else, in fact, if you either A, wish to speak, or B, wish to participate. We do have people coming from overseas, which is fantastic to attend. At the moment, there's some UK speakers that this group probably won't know, but let's call them the seasoned, the veteran speakers that you do know. We've got Nancy Wyford, who's probably the authority on George Durand-Schultz and has done a lot of work with Bill Wesley Frazier. Bart Camp, you must know. Johnny Cairns will be speaking. Scott Reed, another Scotsman, who's done a lot of quirky research on some of the peripheral aspects of the assassination. Gary Severson, you probably know him from the Midwest, from the Dakotas. He's actually flying over to the UK, so he's going to be attending in person. The Grodens will be speaking remotely. Brooks has offered to speak. Casey has offered to speak. Paul Abbott, who's a really good researcher in Australia. He's just done a fantastic book on the Ruby murder of Oswald. Chris Gallup. Gary, obviously, you'll know Chris Gallup. He's offered to speak. Bill Simpich is going to do something on the rogue journalists and probably rogue law enforcement. So I'm building quite a nice program at the moment. As I say, it'll be a 3 day event. If you are interested, please reach out to me personally or the DPUK Gmail account. I'll put them in the chat for you. It's not clear, David, whether I'll be accepting remote attendance for the reasons that you know why remote attendance is not, you know, necessarily optimal. There can be connectivity problems. Obviously, this is a fantastic venue, but we're not incorporated. We are literally just a society. So taking payment might be an issue as well for us. So, and also the third point, I guess, on that is that, you know, it might cannibalize in attendance, attendance in person as well, which, again, obviously you've had to consider when you do your stuff in Dallas. But I'll give you the emails, put it in the chat. Please reach out to me if anybody's interested as a participant. I mean, we'd love to have you over in the UK. I mean, I picked a really good venue in a beautiful part of the country. If you want to speak, whatever. Any questions on that?
Well, just a quick comment. Definitely, you know, we like to support other groups. Definitely Neil, Bart Camp, Dealey Plaza UK. They've been a supporter of us, and they've come overseas for our Dallas conference before. I remember sitting down just a couple years ago and having a beer with Neil. It's always a great
conference that they put on. I've had the opportunity to speak at one of their conferences before. Obviously, I can't fly, but I was able to zoom in. You know, definitely want to show the love and support for these guys and what they're doing because, you know, it's not just a United States, you know, case. This is a world case, and I'm so extremely happy that Dealey Plaza UK has been around for as long as they have. I remember getting a chance to talk to Ian through letter, phone calls, and in person, and he's definitely one of the researchers that I miss the most. Getting a chance to sit down and pick his brain, just some of the stories he used to be able to tell about when he would come over to Dallas and when he would hang out with Larry Howard at the Assassination Information Center. So definitely, Neil, we will plug that as much as we can. And if you can figure out a way how to do a simulcast for those that can't travel or can't afford to travel, you know, please keep me advised of that because I think we could definitely get a large audience for those that won't be able to come over to the UK. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is efficacy in looking into that, David. You know, we can publicize it through our YouTube channel, our Facebook, plus, of course, all the links that you have on your website as well, and the you know, you've got a wider reach, I think, of attendees and participants than we have. So maybe we can work together on that. I'm just a little bit, we've got the critical mass to go ahead with the event. We've got the critical mass in terms of in-person attendees. We've got certainly sufficient interest and almost to the point where I might have to drop speakers because I want to make the program as, you know, you know the issues, to make the program.
Yeah, that's a good issue to have, Neil.
That's a lovely problem to have, honestly. for a fact, it's going ahead. It's just whether we can take that extra step to have remote attendees amongst our membership, which is fine. That's easy. It's when, as you know, it's when you go out to, in inverted commas, a paying public that might create some kind of issues, but certainly I'd like to work with you guys if we do go down that route.
Awesome.
Neil, thank you for coming on here, and if you have a slot for me, put me in. Like I said before, I would do so. And if you want to cut me out because you have better technology, that's fine also. I understand that. But
well, whatever happens, it's going to be a varied program. I mean, one of our greatest researchers is a guy called Pete Meller, who's a regular contributor to the Ed Forum, and he wanted to do something on the other assassinations, and that's the sort of thing that I might have to cut because it's supposed to be, you know, JFK. JFK orientated. I'm not saying I will cut it. I'm just saying that, you know, that's what he wanted to do, you know, do something on. But one of the other ideas I have got is if there is multiple interest, is to start doing some panels and have some more discursive slots as well. So just want to get it out there, guys. You know, I'm really excited about this. You know, the society is still, you know, kind of thriving despite the demographic. I haven't been able to upload these two videos, but, you know, we had Bill Weston on recently. Now, Bill Weston, he's quite a low profile guy, you know, and if you want to go to somebody on the TSBD, you know, Bill Weston is your man. And, just 2 weeks ago, we had Walt Brown. Walt Brown is low profile these days. Yeah. As well, you know, so we're still kind of hanging on in there and you know, trying to do what you do, just obviously more of a limited scale because of where we are, you know.
Well, definitely, you know, keep me advised of what's going on, Neil. You know, reach out to me, email, phone call, whichever, and like I say, whatever we can do on this side of the pond to help promote, I would be honored to do so.
Yeah, that's great. So I just noticed something quickly in the chat. Pete McKeever has talked about the Rick Russo marathon event. That was, I think, probably another 4-hour Zoomcast that we did where Brooks and Rick they teamed up and did a lot of research. It's all Bethesda orientated, and it's all about the reveal of the old morgue. So if any of you guys have not seen that video, it's on our YouTube channel. Please look at it. And it's actually just reared its ugly head in a thread on the Ed forum. I mean, not our particular video, but this whole morgue situation has revealed its ugly head. And I think that's a really good go-to thing. Brooks, are you still on the Brooks, do you want to comment on that at all?
I'm here. Yeah, Brooks. I just put the link up in the chat for that.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a lot of research, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's an amazing story when you soak it all in and you realize that, because we never really, a lot of speculation on how JFK's body got into a shipping casket and the multiple deliveries of caskets and the decoy ambulance, and it just makes your head spin. But the biggest problem I think we've always had is trying to reconcile the observations of Jenkins and O'Connor, the things they saw, the timing differences. But a lot of it, I think we solve. It's a four-hour presentation. It's worth to watch. The people that have watched it, and I've gone back and I've noted that some of them have watched it, you know, three, four times. I myself have watched it four times because it's interesting. Just you got to invest the time to do it because you pull a lot of stuff out of there. We haven't solved everything, but I think it's pretty obvious that the old morgue was involved, just due to the disparity of the description of some of the witnesses. And I won't go any further because if you just watch it on YouTube, it's probably the one thing that I've done in the last 12 years that I enjoyed the most, and I think the result was really good.
Well, it was good, Brooks, and all of our attendees loved it. And it's also getting lots of positive comments on our YouTube channel.
Yeah, I wanted to say to Brooks and also Rick Russo, I saw the presentation that you guys put out at DPUK, and I thought it was very well done. It was long, but at the same time, as a researcher, nothing's longer than 61 years. So, but at the same time, it was well put together, and I think pretty well taken by most people who are looking at things like this. And I don't want to try to promote Larry Rivera, but if you're looking for a pretty good new information, especially on the Zapruder film, Larry Rivera would be a good person to look at. And I don't know if he would speak across there or at least do something.
How about David Sanchez Morales?
Yes.
Well, Larry, I reached out to you when I saw you last in Dallas at the DoubleTree, so expect something from me.
Okay, yeah, I emailed you, but I apparently didn't get an answer, but we'll have to reach out.
I didn't actually see that. I know that you had a problem with Gmail.
I did. My domain. Meredith.com, for some reason, all of a sudden, it was not able to send any emails to the Gmail domain, and others loosened up like Yahoo and Hotmail, but Gmail, I don't know. There was, I think I know who was responsible for that, but I'm not going to go there. That's not, you know. It's a little difficult sometimes.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely reach out to you, Larry. I mean, I suspect that's a Gmail thing because I certainly haven't received an email from you.
Mm-hmm. No, but I send it from my Gmail account. I have a separate Gmail account. Yeah. I'll look up the date and everything, and probably forward a copy to David or something. Maybe if it's a problem, you know, with spam filters or something like that. I don't know.
Mm. But I'll put the two emails into the chat function. So if any of you guys want to reach out, please do so.
All right, well, Neil, thank you again, and for everybody watching in the replay, and for future future journey meetings, we will definitely give some more details as they come along to us from Neil and Dealey Plaza UK. And Neil, you're welcome to come on anytime. I know there's a big time difference between between us here in the US and over in and you in the UK, but I'm really glad that you were able to come on today and to share some insight with us.
Yeah.
I'm gonna grab our last gear here. As you can tell, I'm in my trucker idea here. I can't say I miss it, but anyway, I've been missing Larry for the last month on back and forth. And Larry, I want to apologize. There's been a lot of shit going on, and I like you. I was really hoping for a Chiefs and Lions Super Bowl, and I cannot believe that.
Too many injuries on defense, you know. But it's okay because I had Casey, you know. He took up the slack.
Well, I appreciate him, you know, filling in for me. But, it's going to be a good Super Bowl. I just wish the Lions were there instead of the Eagles. I know you and
I know when Hutchinson went down, it wasn't going to happen because he was too important a part of the defense.
Yeah, absolutely. When the defense faltered, everything just went straight to hell. You know, I mean, it was.
I thought Aaron Glenn, you know, he did miracles. You know, with whether he, you know, some days he was working with at least three guys coming off the practice squad, you know, and stuff like that. But anyway, we mentioned David Morales, and obviously we can start with that on the topic of the potential document releases that are still there. I think 2020, when some of the documents, when the process of being released, we were able to find, of all things, you know, a 61-page PDF on David Morales, David Sanchez Morales. And just the information in there, plus other sources, I was able to complete a chapter in the book, which I sent to a couple of colleagues, and some of the Casey was just amazed at what this guy was responsible for in Havana, Cuba, and you know, the order of the information that's there, that my wish list has to start with Morales is three or four, but number one, Lee's passport that was renewed in June of 1963, D092526. I've talked about it many times here. And I went and I found the passport along with the receipt by the FBI's own Warren DeBrew on the Tuesday. And if I can get the share here going, am I allowed here?
Yeah, let me see here. Give me just a quick second.
Because Larry was mentioning, you know, instances where we need to have actual documents that prove that they had the document in their possession, okay? And I can't find of a better example than the passport, okay, for which right here, okay, and I wrote this up back last year when I first found copies of the passport at North Texas State. Are we good?
Yeah, oh, you've got the screen.
North Texas State University, you know, where I found this picture of his possessions at 1026 North Beckley, and the perhaps misinformation or misconception, rather, that the passports were in Ruth Payne's house or her garage, you know, of all places. In fact, they were found at both passports, the old and the newer one, at the 1026 North Beckley address. And so, and this is the actual receipt signed here by Warren DeBrew, okay, for passport D092526 in the name of Lee Oswald, okay? So this, the chain of custody ends here with the FBI. I went ahead and did a FOIA request to the FBI with this information, and they referred me to NARA. Okay, so as far as we are concerned, as far as historically speaking, these should be at the National Archives. Now, why is this passport so important? You know, the entire Mexico City scenario is predicated on the passport being used there, okay, by, as far as I'm concerned, an imposter, but the passport itself has a page that's clearly marked not valid for travel to Cuba. So as far as I'm concerned, anything that happened in Mexico City cannot be valid because that passport, and we know that it was used in the visa applications for Cuba. In fact, this type of transaction was never even happening in the Cuban consulate. There was no way anybody could come there and say, I want to go to Cuba and present a U.S. passport because it said it was prohibited to travel to Cuba on that passport. And that is why it was suppressed for so long. The only problem is that the FBI was not counting on the DPD taking high-resolution photographs of these of the pages of the passport, and then these in turn being sent after they were digitized, you know, and processed to the university where it had resided for so many years. Now, the actual passport, why is it important? Because this passport book would tell us if between June 24, 1965, 1963, and Mexico City or beyond, even in November, Lee, you know, traveled, you know, somewhere, and the visas would have been stamped on the passport book. I can't stress enough the importance of this passport that we know exists. We know that it existed. Now we have high-resolution photos, images of the passport, and a lot of authors have a lot invested in Mexico City, but they never knew about the passport, that this passport existed and what was in it, you know. So that's my number one on my list. Number two has got to be the Morales file with all the information about the explosion of the Lacubre. The Lacubre was this Belgian vessel that exploded in Havana Harbor in January 1960, okay, 200 people killed instantly because it was carrying armaments, you know, for Castro, and it was a French steamer. And so the thing is that the explosion and the fingerprints of what happened there are exactly what David Morales was trained to do and what he was trained to train others to do. And I wrote the chapter and I sent it on, and Casey, what do you think about that?
I think, let me get you on here.
Yeah, on the Lacubre.
Casey, you muted your mic.
Well, am I on now?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. I was pretty amazed that you actually tracked it right back to the harbor there, and I'm sitting there going, God, I mean, fingerprints are all over that, and it certainly looks like David Morales is 100% behind this stuff. And who he was working for at that time, well, of course, I go back to several different things that you could say is CIA, military intelligence. You could also look at, I'm trying to think, David Denton and I have been doing research on some of the intelligence agencies coming out of the Pentagon. But at the same time, the fingerprints of this are David Morales. And it certainly looks like he either trained these guys or he did it himself. And if I have any idea who Morales is, he probably didn't do it himself. But he was young enough to be able to get in and do that. He had the background to get this done, but I would say that he probably trained the people to do that.
Well, you look at his file, what's left of it's only 61 pages, and there's a profile page which says that underwater demolition was his specialty, paramilitary and operations, you know, FI, which to recruit locals to do that work for him. And it's interesting, in the 70s, 75, I believe it was, the New York Daily News saw it important enough to run a four-part series on this. And they immediately, unabashedly, identified the CIA as the entity that caused this, you know. And we're talking about how many years later, and the New York Daily News, you know, runs this this series, you know, and I also published their you know, the front page, and you know how they deduced that this you know had to have been the CIA. So then after him, obviously, then we have the Brew memorandum of 1225 that's supposed to be 40 pages long, but there's only 2 pages. And in it happens to be a very crucial and important time frame where Lee Oswald was being very aggressively under surveillance, you know, and so they knew exactly where he was and what he was doing. And it's clear, you know, there the informants, the reports of the informants that he lists in that document, and you would expect the rest of the file to contain, you know, those reports, that information. But unfortunately, the file, the report stops at 2 pages, and it just whets your appetite, and the other 38 pages are missing. So that's my wish list. It's only 4 of them, and, you know, I think they're, you know, pretty important. Now, I don't know if David wants me to go and do a little bit of the blender. David, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Go ahead and let everybody know about going down and taking the photographs in Dealey Plaza with the Red Courthouse. And then you went in and actually redone some of the blender images. So let's go ahead and switch to that gear and give us the information you have on that.
Well, I want to talk about Harleys first.
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead. I saw that in the email. Go ahead and run that one first.
Yeah, Larry, before you get on there, let me explain something to a lot of people here. You know, we've looked at the Zook film over and over 10 million times. But what we don't really get a chance to hear is the, you know, I mean, I'd love to I'd love to have the acoustics instead of just the visual. I'd like to have the audio with this, but I want to point that out to you that and Larry's going to bring this up. So go ahead and go, Larry. This is
and I agree, and thanks for bringing that up because we only see the Z film, but we don't hear anything, and we're going, wait a minute, that's not, you know, the environment that you know. In the setting that that we're seeing here, obviously you've got 4 Harleys adjacent to the limos, and the sound and everything. When you bring this into perspective, now you say, wait a minute, you're bringing that extra sense, okay, into the visual of the Z film, and it must have been quite noisy, you know. So if you see, and later on we see these reports, especially the 1975 reports on the motorcycle cops, the belated interviews of that the FBI did with the motorcycle cops, and they all said, oh, yeah, I heard shots from behind, I heard shots from here, you know, everything from behind. And that's a lot of crap because they couldn't hear anything, and especially, you know, with the covers and in the helmets and everything. You know, they were just going by, reacting by what they saw. Okay, so let's just go in here. And this is the scene. Can everybody see this? You see this there?
Yeah, we've got it.
Okay. Okay, so I'm just going to activate the material here and just listen to it. And this is only 2 Harleys. Whoop.
We have video. We don't have audio. Okay. Go to your audio and make sure you
go to share. Okay. Share sound. Okay, gotcha. Nope.
Nope, we don't have any sound. Have video, no sound.
Okay, start the share, optimize. Share sound and optimize for video clip, right?
Yeah, that should be the correct setting.
Oops. Nope.
Okay, go down to your microphone in the bottom left corner, and when you click on where it says microphone and speaker,
make sure those are clicked on in the same system.
Yeah, same as system. Everything is good.
Okay, let's try it again.
No, but I didn't have to. Well, let me. Speaker. Well,
you don't have anything on that window muted, do you?
No. Share sound. Everything is good. Optimize for video clip. Let's try this one here. Can you hear that?
Yep, we got it now.
So that's just a little routine that I built, you know, to get, you know, the, first get the motorcycles ready, get the wheels turning, you know, and configure the sound and everything to place it later on into the scene. So that's what this is about. Now, the other thing that you wanted, and this doesn't have any sound here, the building, okay? Remember Richardson Romanesque, okay? And this is a result of going to Dealey Plaza in November and taking a whole bunch of pictures, you know, and getting the textures and the colors right, you know, and the entire architecture. It's still not perfect, but it's a lot better than it was before. So, and then dropping it into the scene, okay? And, you know, why is this important? Well, it's part of the Dealey Plaza composition, you know, and that's why it's important. Now, the last thing that you want to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, so for the viewers that are watching this, are you, the question they may be having as well, are you planning on making, like, a version of the Zapruder film with sound to make it more realistic than just what we're watching on the Z film?
Yeah, we already have, in fact, let me see if I have this up here. Edit here.
I'm sure somebody's going to ask, are you going to put in sounds of shots going on to coincide with what we're seeing on the screen?
Let me just show you what we have so far regarding in the Newcomb tapes what they said about the
because I mean this is exciting, folks. I mean to be able to recreate the Zapruder film with different viewpoints instead of vantage points instead of just what the Z film showed, and then have a soundtrack to overlay on top of it. We're getting something that obviously the Z camera could not mimic at that point in time in the 60s, but with technology and the way things are going with how Larry's building the Blender model, it's going to be a lot more intuitive, in depth, and immersive into what was seen and also what was not seen.
And heard now that we were able to, you know, get those Harleys in there. Now, are you able to see this image here? Good?
Yep,
okay.
We've got it.
Okay, so this is where we have the limo stopped, you know, the lights are on and everything. And so we've got Bobby Hargis dismounting, and this is exactly per the Newcomb tapes. I'm not making this up, you know. Pistol in hand. Here's a gorgeous image. You know, this is from the Z film with a wide angle. You know, now that we have the HDRI sky that changes the entire complexion of the scene. You know, before that, you know, now you have all this depth going on here. And so that's why I wanted to show you this one, you know, how the sky, you know, makes the entire scene, you know, really jump out at you. And again, Bobby, and here he's starting to go in between. And this is what we can do here, you know, create our own reality of what really happened there.
Okay. And the reality of this is not just, you know, it's not what we saw in the Zeta. We didn't see Hargis dismount and walk across, but with the Newcomb tapes, with the testimony that was given, and what eyewitnesses say they saw, and the people in the motorcade itself, we're getting a chance to see for the first time, thanks to Larry and the Blender model, and the amount of time and work he's put into this, getting a chance to see what actually we, you know, never got a chance to before.
This is years in the making.
Yeah, and let's just say this. I mean, from 2 years ago when we first, well, I think it's...
Oh, yeah.
It's been 2 or 3 years we've been doing the jury meeting compared to where we're at today, your model.
Yeah, we're giving you stills.
Yeah, I mean, the model that you were built, that you've been constantly changing and building and making better, I mean, it's a hell of a difference compared to what it was, you know, just, hell, even 6 months ago, Larry.
Yeah, I remember at first I was just giving you stills, you know, and say, oh, you know, eventually it's going to get animated. Well, here it is now, you know, wheels
right.
Turning, flags are waving, lights are, you know, wigwags, you know, and et cetera. So what I wanted to, you know, if I may, you know, for the next 10 minutes, maybe just go into this Harper fragment thing, you know.
Oh, absolutely. You've got the floor. I don't want to say I saved the best for last because everybody is great what we've had on today. But, you know, it would not be a jury meeting if we did not have – the Larry Rivera hour. So
not hour, you know, at least. Yeah. All
right. Absolutely. So, can you hear me, Larry?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to say one thing. Probably about, I'm going to say 10 to 15 years ago, David and I and Brian were sitting around talking, and this is before we got the opportunity to talk to you. But we were talking about redoing a Zapruder film. And then leaving all the splices out that we knew that were in there, but we now know that there's a lot more splices and film that has been cut out. But we were going to try to rebuild that film and show that slide by slide. And I started putting something together like that and had four slides that were just completely blackout. And then went from let's say a Zapruder frame 208 to 212. We had blackouts there. And at the same time, once we get a hold of you, and I'm sitting there going, this guy is going to rebuild this whole damn thing and
right.
see it not only from one point of view, but probably from 75 to 80 different points of view. So I'm going to turn it back to you, buddy. Very good job.
As many cameras as you want. Okay, so I'm going to drop a couple of images, hold on, of the Harper fragment in here. There's one, and there's two. Let me get rid of this. Okay. Hold on.
And real quick while you're saying this, you're setting this up, Larry. Yeah. You know, speaking of the Harper fragment, me and Larry, for the last couple years, we've been working on bringing a two-dimensional photograph of the Harper fragment into an actual 3D, you know, form. And we've showed it here on the shows in the past. And it took a little bit of the first time. I mean, it was a learning curve to bring it from the model from what it, you know, size of a postage stamp to what it is officially. But, you know, we've had several people, you know, such as Doug Horn, Chesser, Mantic, you know, forensic pathologists that have weighed in on the fact of, you know, are we on the right track? And yeah, we actually have now a model that is three-dimensional, folks. It's no longer in a photograph. It's jumped out of that photograph and it's in the, you know, the actual 3D universe of where you can hold it in your hands, put it on the back of your skull and see where it lines up at. And matter of fact, we even had I don't know if I want to pat ourselves on the back, Larry, but we had an auction there at the Dallas conference.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it was at last minute thought on my point. I said, let's have Mantic, Horn, and Chester sign one, and we'll
we'll have them autograph it and we'll auction it off. And I think it brought in 375, I think is what it brought in.
Yeah.
You know, and I get asked the question, you know, at the time it was only available at the conference. I'm going to try to make them available for mail order as well. As of right now, they're not. I just want to make sure that if they go through the postal system, I mean, they're made of plastic, PLA, polylactic acid, and they are susceptible to heat. So I want to make sure that they're not ordered and then they show up at your mailbox and they're completely deformed of what they should be. But I am looking at figuring out a way how to ship those and make them available for purchase later on, or you're just going to have to show up at a conference and pick one up from us. Yeah, go ahead, Larry.
So I've just imported them as images, okay? And just very quickly, you know, I've got several techniques here on, you know, how to create three dimensions here. And we'll start here, this one. First thing I'm going to do is it has a trace image to grease pencil. Okay, and I'm going to make a couple adjustments here. We're going to go 3 here, and we're going to go 0.1 here. All right, so this is, we're turning the image into what is known as a grease pencil, okay? So now, just going to go ahead and move this over. All right. We use the image there. Okay. Professional control and edit mode. Now we're going to go to edit mode. Okay, and it's going to show these. It's going to pick these that are points and delete them. Okay. Now we're going to be left with an outline, but it's not a mesh yet. Okay. We need to convert this. It's a two-step process. We're going to go here and convert this to a path. Oh, now right away you see if you look at to the right, this is the organizer, and this is what just came up. This is the trace. I'm going to rename this outer. Okay, so we can differentiate it from the other. So now that we have that. We're going to go ahead and do some optimization here to the right. That's done. Come back to this resolution. Now we're going to do another conversion of, now we're going to convert this. Oops. Hold on. That's my select. Oops, it's the pen. Okay, this is the one. Okay. And now we can go ahead and turn this into a mesh. Now, once I have it as a mesh, okay, now I can edit and do a lot of things with it. Okay, so let's go ahead and go to edit mode here. Do a little merge by distance. Okay. And now I'm going to fill it out. You see that? I just filled it out. Now, I can go ahead and I can texture this. Okay, and I'll go ahead here. Image texture. And I'm going to pick Lemon Harper. Here we go. And here we go. Now, the other thing that needs to be done here, we need to do a smart unwrap, and I'm going to bring in a second, and I'm going to go to the UV editor. Okay, you see that? Now here I'm going to activate my material. As you can see, it's there, okay, but it's not lined up. You see this? And that's what the UV editor is for. So I can just go ahead in the UV editor, scale it. Okay, that looks pretty good. And now we'll get rid of this, and here it is. Okay, now there is still work to do. Okay, as you can see, it just has the image attached to the object, there is no detail yet. Okay, that's because now I have to go into my shader, and that's right here. Right here, the shader only has the information on the image, which is outer FBI fixed. Okay, so there are other things that need to be added here, and I will start, and I will add a mixer, okay? And the mix shader will allow me to bring other elements, okay? I will duplicate this. This is called node. This is called node setup, okay? And I will duplicate this and bring it down. But now, instead of using the color, I'm going to use this black and white. And the reason for that is because I'm going to add some depth by means of what is called a bump map, okay? So I will go here, bring the bump in, okay? And we have the image. I'm going to go ahead and duplicate this again, okay, because I already have that. And I'm going to plug this color in here into the fraction, the factor, I don't know what they call it, node. And at the same time here, I'm going to bring this guy here to the normal, and I'm going to bring this guy here to the normal. As you can see, I'm already starting to get changes here. Now, here on the strength of the bump, okay, this is going to give us depth. Let's see here, okay, normal bump, okay. It was working earlier. Oh, I'm sorry. It's the height. Okay, there we go. Okay, now check this out. This is without the data from the black and white. What the black and white, what Blender does with the black and white, it interprets the different shades of black and white and gives you what is called a bump map. Here it's on zero, but as I increase, you see this? Now, voila, look at this. We have a totally different interpretation. Now you can see the raised areas, okay? Are you copying this, Dave?
Yeah, and this is what this is doing is it's giving an actual, like Larry was saying, a texture to, right. It's, you have to understand, the skull is not, I mean, maybe in a skull model you see in a doctor's office has, you know, smooth plastic or whatever the hell the material is made out of. But in the human bone, it's not just a smooth, you know, It there's the curvature to it and there's a texture to it. And this is what Larry's working on and bringing the texture out. And then later I will recreate this in the 3D engineering of printing the model with this.
Now, the thing about the image is it looks like if you look carefully here now, like there was some kind of scraping or something, you know, and these are raised and the areas that are raised, as you can see. Now, the Harper fragment also has an inner. And that's this part over here and here and here. So it's very hard to put it together because they never took pictures of the curvature, you know, and that really limits what we can do. But, it, you know, it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world here. So here, my next task here would be to extrude, okay, and we'll go into edit mode, and I will go ahead and extrude this on a y-axis, okay? And now you've got the thickness of the object that we're working on here, okay? And then just to finish here real quick, the technique used to bend it, okay, I would first put the origin right here in the middle, and then I would go here and here. Okay.
And just to point out what Larry's going ahead and showing us on this, in the photograph, I mean, you're looking at a two-dimensional photograph of a three-dimensional object that didn't really show the curvature. How do we know there was curvature? Because the human skull has curvature. So in his model and then in the printing of it, we had to account for that in order to, you know, make it real as possible, as real as can be.
That's right. So We would go here. Okay. And, you know, bend it. Oops. And bend it. And now, you know, we have something, you know, a lot closer to what, you know, really was. Okay, that's one technique. Now, I'm just going to quickly move on to the other. Let's real quick. We'll get rid of this. Get rid of this. And there is a fun. Put the cursor back in the center. Okay. And we're going to add an image as plane. Okay, there's a different technique. Okay, and we're going to go into our Harper. Harper, here we go. And here we are. Now, let's go here and rotate 90. Oops. Rotate 90. Okay. So, another rotate. Okay, good. Okay, here. And we will activate this texture here. This is very interesting because what we're going to do now, we're going to use what's called a displacement modifier. Okay, and the first thing we need to do is we need to subdivide this big time. By subdividing a model or a mesh, you're able to get a lot more geometry, a lot more detail, okay? So we're going to go ahead and do a simple subdivision, okay? Let's keep this around 5 and, oops, we're not going to do that. Okay, and we'll go ahead and apply that. Now, if I go to edit mode, you'll see now how it's been subdivided. You see that? And I would even subdivide it a little bit more. Okay, let's try this. Okay, now we're going to go back to object mode, and we're going to add another modifier, and this is called, and I like this one, a displacement modifier. What the displacement modifier is going to go ahead and take that image, okay, and actually it's already in the UV, so I don't have to do this. Hold on. Okay. Let me go back here. Okay, we need the UV here, local. This is what I was missing, UV. Okay. So now that we have that set up, now we can go down to the texture and bring that. We don't need that because we already have them here. Cancel that out. And we got this guy. So let's go back and take this off. Material. Okay. Now, look at this. You see that?
Oh, yeah.
It has, you know, reformulated and into a mesh, but that's too high. So I got to go back down here, and on the strength, let's start with 200. Okay. As you can see now, it's getting a little bit more like what we're looking for. Let's go to 0.1. Even more, okay. How about 0.5? No, 0.05. Okay, you got that? Now, that looks, you know, all right. So let's go ahead and we'll go into edit mode. And as you can see, this has really been subdivided. We're gonna go into planes here. And I'm going to go ahead and take a sample of this here. And we're going to select link. Okay. Oops. I needed to apply it. Hold on. Okay. I'm going to apply the displacement modifier. And now I can go here, take a sample of this, and then select link. And see, now it's going to, all these faces that I don't need, I can delete them. Okay. Over here. All these faces, all I need to do is, and select linked, similar, get rid of that, okay? And then come back here and do the same. And get rid of that. Now it's just a matter of cleaning it up a little bit, you know, some of these stray faces that are around, you know, and play with it, you know. But now, look, when I switch on the material, go back to the material, look at this, okay? So that's just a very short primer on what, you know, can be done here. The rest of the fine tuning and whatever, well, that's just, you know, work that needs to be done. But the most difficult thing that I have found is when you have the front like this and you have the back is putting them together, okay, so that they look like they obviously are the same object, okay, but putting them together in a cohesive manner to be able to print, 3D print the way that that we have. Obviously, we've talked about this before. We've got the outer down pat, but it's the inner one that we still need to work on, and that's it.
Yeah, Larry, I want to tell you what that was an incredible look at just what it takes to make things in Blender. But the technology that you're using. And younger people can definitely understand this on maybe a little bit better than, you know, people that are, you know, in the older aspect.
Put it on TikTok.
I'm telling you right now, you know, as far as like, you know, I remember, before I made the prints for Dallas, I had went to the lab there at school and showed them what I was, cause my printer, I had to do some fine tuning, and while I was waiting on parts, I went to the campus and printed one of these, and even one of the professors looked. He goes, "How the hell did you make that?" I said, "I didn't make it. I said I'm just the engineer printing it." I said, "My buddy Larry is the one that brought this out." He goes, "Well, I know exactly what that is." He goes, "That's the Harper fragment from JFK." And I said,
"Really?"
Yeah, he knew what it was. And I said, "You've got to be in your 70s." He goes, "Actually, I just turned 75." And I said, "Oh, you're as old as Casey." He goes, "I don't know these people," but he goes, I'm guessing that the need for, you know, a two-dimensional, you know, object became the need for a 3D. I said, well, the fact is we had that object in the archives, but, you know, unfortunately it's one of those things where, you know, it was just lost to the sands of time. I said, so we have to recreate it.
It was the doctor took it. So what was his name? Jeff K's doctor. I forgot his name. Anyway, but why is it important? Why is it important? Because the pictures that were taken, they did not give us the curvature because they didn't want us to know where it came from.
Exactly. Very good point. I mean, and there's been debate over the years. Did it come from the side? Did it come from the back? That's still being debated to this day. But, you know, you cannot hold the curvature up to the side and it make it fit. It has to be from the back.
And the thickness. And the thickness.
That was another part I was getting ready to say is for a person of the age of JFK at the time of his assassination, bone density, thickness changes. And one of the number one things I wanted to make sure happened in the three-dimensional print was to make sure that we were, number one, size, curvature, which Larry had pretty well taken care of the curvature. I had to adjust the size. Because I remember when I first printed, I mean, literally it was in the palm of my hand about the size of a postage stamp. I said, I know the damn thing's bigger than that. So right. We had to adjust that, and then we also had to adjust for thickness. And that was where I called in doctors, forensic pathologists to go, okay, and bone doctors, just how thick would that section of bone, you know, be?
Admiral Berkeley, yeah, thank you, Peter.
Berkeley, yes. But you know, it's one of those things where it's a as of right now. I mean, it's an ever evolving model that Larry works on, and then I get it, and then it's my job to make it into the print that we have.
I first did the first version back in 2015, 2016, almost 10 years ago, and we're still working on it.
Right, and just like the Blender model. I mean, the Blender model is. Eventually, I would love to see it complete, you know, Larry, hint, hint, but you've done a hell of a job with where you're going to, where you've come from and where you're going and what's available right now. I mean, you've made strong strides in getting us where we're at on the technology side, in Blender,
not just on Dealey Plaza, but the Harper Fragment as well. So I'm always excited when you send me still shots or videos of going, hey, look what the hell I just did. And I'm sitting over here drooling going, okay, we got to show this at the next Journey meeting and speak of it at the conference as well, because this is tools that we have, technology tools that we have, that we have to implement.
Larry, I'm giving you a standing ovation, buddy, for all the research that you've done, buddy. Phenomenal.
Well, and with Larry, he's a multifaceted guy. He's not just a researcher and author, but he's a pioneer when it comes to, and I will say this, he's a pioneer when it comes to technology, and I base a lot of the stuff I do off of his work. I really wish that we would have been collaborating decades ago, but I'm happy to call him a friend and a brother now. And obviously, like I say, it wouldn't be a Journey meeting without, we've got our lawyers, you know, we've got our researchers, we've got our authors, you know, special guests, and we've got Larry as our technical advisor on technology. So
you know, unfortunately, a lot of times I got too many coals in the fire, you know, so, you know, I got to juggle them, you know.
Well, and that's the thing with the JFK case. I mean, and I speak from the heart on this. I mean, you know, years ago, I could dedicate 24 hours a day on this subject. As a single dad and a college student, yet my time is limited. And unfortunately, that's just the way of life. I mean, everybody's time, if we could put all of our minds together and work on this every minute of the day, we'd be even farther than what we're at now. But we've come a long way in 61 years. Hell, we've come a long way since Project JFK started the online portion in 2018. So I gotta give my hats off to everybody that comes on the Journey meetings with us and shares their areas of expertise, because, you know, no matter who you are in the audience, whether you are a seasoned researcher, whether you are a first-generation researcher, or you're a newbie, everybody has something to share and something to gain from what we are doing here. So I got to give my I can't stand up at the moment, but I would give my stand ovation to every one of you. And you guys have made me very proud of being able to do what I do to make the programming and also the fact of, you know, getting the research community to pay attention to, you know, just what the hell we're doing. And I think when I get the comments from everybody at the conference in person, they drop me an email, a quick phone call, or a text message, sometimes phone calls that aren't quick. I enjoy every one of them, and I'm happy to do what I do in my small part of, you know, doing this, researching and presenting as well. So with that, I mean, we're on our 3-hour mark, and I know, speaking of time, I've got to bring the meeting to a close. Just because I have homework that's due tomorrow, and I've got quite a bit of shit I still have to read. But before we close, I wanna plug a few things here real quick. Larry Snapp had to leave us a while ago, but he wants to make sure that we do our homework assignment and call your representative's office. So look it up, and this is exactly what you tell him. It's in the chat log, but for those of you that are watching this on Zoom, the replay will be up later tonight, first thing in the morning. You call in and say, I'm a constituent of, find out who the name of your representative is. And you are calling to ask the representative, their name, to sign the Dear Colleagues letter of Representatives Cohen and Swikert regarding the JFK, RFK, and MLK records. They should give their name and their phone number. So be sure to, don't fail, be sure to do that. Also, be sure to check out the Project JFK CSI Dallas website at projectjfk.com for information that you won't find anywhere else on the internet. It's a very good teaching tool, a learning tool. And then also, again, it's the old-fashioned phone book in a new technology way of finding other websites that are valuable, important, and I encourage everybody to check that out. And while you're stopping by, be sure to hit the subscribe to the website. If you can make a donation, please do so. It helps us in our ventures of keeping the group going the way that it's going. And hopefully, like I say, things will get better as the months and years pass. The other last thing is when you're on YouTube,
and you watch any videos, whether it's from the website or you go directly to the YouTube channel, be sure to hit the like, subscribe, and hell, people, make a comment. Whether it's you know, you like what was said, or you have a question. And for those of you that are in the meeting that can maybe answer that question that somebody may have that they weren't here for the live, go in and if you can give a destructive answer, maybe you know something that, you know, you can share the information. The more comments and stuff that we have, the more interaction that we can engage, then, you know, that just helps out the people that are watching the videos afterwards. There's a lot of content on there. We've released the Truth series on there. If you haven't had a chance to watch that, you're looking at about, what, 34, 35 hours of your life that you can break up into sections and watch stuff that was done over the years of people that aren't even here anymore. But because they spoke to myself or to Brian and Casey, that becomes part of the historical record, as part of the research that, you know, as long as it's in video and it's up, then you have an opportunity to hear from people from the past. People like Dr. Rob McClellan, Jim Marsh, Sherry Feaster. There's a ton of people that's on there. Johnny Brewer, we have him on there as well. So, you know, check those out. And there's also a conference that me and Brian Casey did in Kansas City. Those videos are on there as well. So, you know, if you haven't seen us or you want to see something else we talk about, go on there and watch them. They're free. The information is there for you to view, to put in your mind, to help you understand different topics. Or maybe you'll watch it and you have a question, then you can reach out to the three of us and ask your question or give a comment. If you have an idea, you know, share it. That's what we're here for. So with that, I want to thank all of our special guest speakers today. Tyler Nixon, Larry Snaff, Roger Stone, Larry Rivera, Neil Savate over in the Dealey Plaza UK group. Anybody else that I may have missed? Obviously, I want to thank Brian and Casey to come on and represent the group. Everybody has something to say, so the forum is here for you guys to use. So I want to say thank you again. I wish you guys all the best. Go Kansas City Chiefs for the three-peat of the Super Bowl. With that, I'm going to bring this training meeting to a close. Look for an update, especially with the Trump executive order. The moment that we have something, also don't want to forget J. Gary Shaw. The moment that we have something that we can come back and join back to figure out what's going on, especially with the deadline. Larry, he reaches out to me, and we can throw something together on the fly and in a quick hurry. So always make sure you check your email from us. Check out that website, even if it's just, you know, once a week or a few times a week, under the events tab, because that's when you're going to know when the journey meeting is going to happen again. So with that, everybody, thank you again. Have a wonderful weekend. Everybody stay safe, stay healthy, and keep researching the truth for the JFK assassination. With that, I'm David Knight, your host with Project JFK CSI Dallas.
Thank you.